Blog Talk Radio.
He is the last of his kind. All that remains of a once powerful nation. Some think he is a myth. Some believe he is the chosen one, who will bring balance to a world at war. And some will stop at nothing to destroy him.
Greetings, hotels and peace. We are within 30 days until Summit of the Moors, August 16th through the 18th. Register today at www.summitofthemoors.com. www.summitofthemoors.com. This is free, a continuation from the January Summit, where economic security is our forefront, our topic, our application, and execution. Be there, August 16th through the 18th. At www.summitofthemoors.com.
Welcome, Moors and Moors Talk Live 100. I'm your host, Tahaka Amana L. Bates, and this evening's broadcast will be on the knowledge to escape Rome. All right, now, what we're going to be dealing with here is some things from a position. We have excerpts from Sister Yakube. And she's going to be dealing with some information and some information from the ancestors to us, as well as other information that's going to be put down here in dealing with what it will take for us to survive the coming collapse of Rome. Okay? And we're going to clearly define all of that stuff for you here in this broadcast this evening. How do you escape the clutches of Rome? What does religion have to do with the state in America? What is the so-called, what is so important about definition? Where is Rome today? Do you have a family by definition? These and other points we're going to bring up here this evening. But I want to make mention of the fact, for those of you who are listening to the broadcast for the very first time, if you send for my free articles, send that to tarhaka53@hotmail.com, and I'll send that to you as an email attachment. That's Secrets of America, the U.S. Bankruptcy and the Moors, the Truth About the 14th Amendment, the Commerce Game Exposed, and other articles. You send that to tahaka53@hotmail.com, and I'll get that to you. Also, for those of you who are trying to cancel your mortgage contract, if you're dealing with child support, if you have a student loan lingering over your head, you've been steady paying and trying to get this thing off of you, go to www.newfreehelpgroup.com and look at the various information there and click on TahakaArchives.org, and we have a complete lineup of packages there that makes it possible for you to relieve yourself of these burdens. Okay, now, before we get down into the crux of this matter, the first thing that I want to say is, when you are dealing with Rome, you are dealing with contracts, and these contracts are designed to benefit the people contract, be it verbal or written. And in order for you to be free so that you can think and be creative, you're going to have to relieve yourself of the burden of these contracts. That is what we are here to do this evening. We want to lay this information out for you. And I want you to read between the lines and associate the information that you're hearing with the contracts that we have. We're going to deal with the origin of the situation. We're going to deal with Rome. We're going to deal with the relationship aspect and everything else. We're going to start with a small few plugs, and then we're going to gradually get into dealing with surviving Rome. Because that's the main crux of this matter. Now, the information on that is going to be kind of rough. There'll be some things said that I'm not in agreement with as far as the language is concerned. However, the information was too important to overlook. So I have no choice but to bring it to you this evening. So y'all along.
Welcome back. It's true that being black in America is hazardous to your health. African Americans have higher rates of diseases like HIV/AIDS, hypertension, and diabetes, and are more likely to die from violence and have less access to quality health care. Yet there's another shocking stat that doesn't get much attention. For every 1,000 children born to black mothers, 13 of them will die before their first birthday. That's an infant mortality rate of 13.1 per 1,000 live births. And that's according to the Center for Disease Control and Prevention in Atlanta. And it's more than twice the rate of white American women, at 5.6 per 1,000, and higher than the rate of countries like Portugal at 3 per 1,000, Croatia at 4 per 1,000, or Romania at 11 per 1,000. Some of the causes seem predictable. Compared to whites, black women in America get lower quality medical care, especially if they're poor or lack full service health insurance. Other factors are obesity, smoking, or poor nutrition during pregnancy. But several studies over the last decade show that the 13.1 infant mortality rate is about the same for healthy, affluent black women with college degrees. Age isn't a factor either. Black mothers across the range of childbearing years are losing their babies at a double-digit rate. Doctors now point the finger at the chief culprit, racism. Yes, racism. In a 2007 study, researchers in Chicago compared infant birth weights of babies. Low birth weight is a key indicator of infant mortality and a newborn's health. Infants born to white women had an average birth weight of 7.5 pounds. Infants born to African and Caribbean immigrants new to the United States had an average birth weight of 7.3 pounds. So the average birth weight of babies in the two groups were nearly identical. But the same study found that babies born to the next generation, the daughters of black immigrants, had dropped to the same average weight as African-American children, about 6.8 pounds, almost a full pound lighter than white babies. Doctors, at a loss for a scientific explanation, now believe the everyday stress of being a black woman in a mostly white society is the cause. One researcher said constantly dealing with racism is like revving a car's engine without easing up on the gas. The stress takes its toll in the lives of unborn children. Now, joining us today to take a deeper look at the alarming infant mortality rate in the black community and to identify solutions to bring down the rate are two specialists in the field. Dr. Nadine Gracia, Acting Director of the Office of Minority Health at the Office of Health and Human Services, and Dr. Michael Young, a neonatologist and chairman of the Department of Pediatrics at Howard University Hospital. Folks, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So somebody watching may say, give me a break. Can you really believe racism is the reason behind it? But there really is no other rationale to explain this.
Well, and I think one of the important things to think about is when we define health, and the World Health Organization defines health as a complete state of physical, mental, and social well-being. So recognizing that physical factors are important, but also that social well-being and thinking about psychological stress and social stress can also be important factors that influence our health.
Those stresses also of racism can be translated into poor behavior. so that you will see more smoking and you will see poor diet choices and you will see lifestyle changes that can affect the unborn child.
And when we talk about race, I mean, obviously we're talking about when you're on, even in the workforce, in terms of the things that you have to go through dealing with supervisors and dealing with folks very well might be, you know, questioning your own particular work, things along those lines. And then outside of that, just what, you know, whether or not you're driving down the street, cop pulls up behind you, you automatically tense up, checking, okay, do I have my life? Do I have my driver's license, my insurance, all of those sort of different things. Is that what we're really talking about here?
Well, I think it's a multitude of factors, and certainly when we think about health, and to Dr. Young's point about how that type of social stress can also lead to unhealthy behaviors, it's really how we, certainly at the Department of Health and Human Services, really thinking about how you transform health and health care. And certainly we have no better platform for that than the president's leadership through the signing of the Affordable Care Act, which is helping us to provide better access to care, but also improving the quality of health care that women receive.
Well, just out at me was the fact that even if you are a college-educated black woman, you have the same issues.
You do, but you have to remember that college-educated black woman may be the first college-educated black woman in her family. So she's stepping out from a set of circumstances that while she has that education, she has the habits of the home that she came out of.
Mm-hmm.
And so that just economic is not enough. And even with the college education, we still are not, in spite of the Ledbetter rule, we're still not paid the same. And so you have households that have same kind of financial stresses. And so an economic plus does not always translate into a better circumstances necessarily.
So even those individuals, they've had the cultural influences for so many years are still impacting them.
Yeah.
Well, and another thing that we see, too, is that women, you know, still, even though they are the primary caregivers in their families and they're connecting all of their, you know, their children and their husbands and spouses to care, they often are the last to seek care. And
mm-hmm.
so we also see, for example, that African-American women, they still have higher rates of either not having prenatal care or getting prenatal care in the third trimester, not getting access to preventive screenings that can actually lead to healthy pregnancies. And so that, again, is where the health care law plays such an important role to really improve the quality of health care and the access to health care.
So how do we actually change this then? Because obviously, even if that child doesn't die, that child is still impacted later in life. Jeffrey Canada said when it comes to the state of black children in education, we've got to go back to the womb. He said black children are behind, even in the womb, behind white children. So how do we change it? Where do we start? What do we do?
Well, preconceptional health is actually important. And when we say preconceptional, that's women who, before they get pregnant, before they even think about getting pregnant, improving their diet, their exercise, their lifestyle is a big piece. Because most pregnancies, even in married settings, are unplanned. And so if you have not taken care of your health prior to that point, then you've got some catching up to do.
Mm-hmm.
And in an unplanned set circumstances, sometimes people delay getting into the healthcare system. And if they happen to also be encumbered by poverty, then some systems don't even allow them to until they come to viability,
mm-hmm.
almost 20 weeks before they can say, I'm going to get Medicaid or Medicare to help them. So that there are a lot of little pieces that fall in that can deter the appropriate care for mothers and babies.
And one of the things that our office, the Office of Minority Health, has launched is a campaign to promote awareness about infant mortality in the African-American community. It's called A Healthy Baby Begins With You. And our campaign spokeswoman is actually Tanya Lewis Lee, who goes around the country really educating communities about infant mortality and the importance of preconception health. And partnering with that, we have the Preconception Peer Educators Program, where we actually train and teach college students about the importance of preconception health, as well as access and care, and then they serve as trainers in their own communities, not only on college campuses, but also in the communities where those campuses are located, and we've trained over 1,000 students to be those preconception peer educators.
All right, well, Shirley, thanks for all the knowledge and information, and hopefully it will take root and we can change those numbers. I appreciate
Definitely.
It. Thanks a bunch.
There's a sad reality in America when it comes to infant mortality. Did you know that according to the World Health Organization, our nation, the wealthiest on the planet, ranks 40th in the world when it comes to infant mortality? 40th. Think about that. Not only that, 5 years ago, America ranked 30th in the world, which means we've gotten worse in recent years. Roughly 4 newborns die out of every 1,000 that are born in the United States. That puts our nation on par with countries like Qatar, the United Arab Emirates, and Croatia when it comes to infant mortality. So what's the reason behind this disturbingly high rate of infant deaths? This is a question that my next guest has struggled with. Tanya Lee Lewis joins me now. She's an attorney, author, and former TV producer, as well as a documentary filmmaker and, like her husband Spike Lee, a lifelong activist. Currently, she is the spokesperson for the Office of Minority Health's Healthy Baby Begins With You campaign. Take a look at this short PSA, and then we'll bring Tanya on.
Every year, 8,000 African-American children die during their first year of life.
8,000.
As a mother, this really concerns me. Our babies are dying at 3 times the rate of white babies before their first birthday. Our children need us to take action, and I need your help. Take care of your health before, during, and after pregnancy. Get prenatal care and put your baby to sleep on his back. A healthy baby really does begin with you.
Tanya, welcome from our New York studio. Thanks for joining us.
And thank you for having me, Tom.
You made a movie and a film, Crisis in the Crib, Saving Our Nation's Babies, which was featured in the campaign by the Office of Minority Health. What drew you to this cause?
I'm sorry, I just couldn't hear you. I didn't hear your question.
Yeah, I mentioned the movie that you made, Crisis in the Crib, Saving Our Nation's Babies. And I was wondering what drew you to this particular cause?
Well, you know, I have worked in the children's media for years. Spike and I wrote a few children's books. We've written 3 children's books. I've worked with Nickelodeon. I have a real passion for children. And the Office of Minority Health called me in 2007 and asked me to get on board with a campaign. And at the time, I was really not aware of the high rates of infant mortality in the United States. And I'm a person who reads the news a lot. I read several newspapers a day. I watch the news. I look at news on the internet. And I was not seeing what was happening with regard to infant mortality in our country. And I figured if I didn't know, then a lot of people didn't know. And I had to get out there and help spread the word.
What are we doing wrong here in the United States that would give us infant mortality numbers that look like third world country numbers?
Well, I would say we're not focusing enough on prevention. You know, infant mortality really is the marker of the health of a nation. And as you mentioned, we now rank 40th in the world, and there is a health disparity where African American babies are dying at higher rates than white babies. But even if you take the African American infant mortality rates out, we still would rank 23rd in the world of industrialized nations. So no one is doing really well. So we're not really taking our health seriously. We are a nation that tends to focus on crisis care as opposed to prevention. So we need to focus on nutrition and making sure people can learn how to eat and take care of themselves and how to get a healthy exercise and safe spaces to work out and exercise.
Richard Wilkinson and Kate Pickett wrote a book called The Spirit Level. They run a program in the UK called the Equality Trust. And they have documented how the more unequal a society is, that is, the greater the gap between the richest fifth and the poorest fifth, the greater that gap is, the worse a whole host of social ills are, from teenage pregnancies to mental health issues to drug abuse to homicides. And right in the middle of that is infant mortality. We have now become the most unequal in terms of wealth among the 34 OECD countries, among the fully developed countries in the world. Is wealth inequality one of the dimensions of infant mortality that our federal government is focusing on? And if not, do you think it should?
Well, I do think that being poor does certainly affect your health adversely, for sure. But what we're finding when it comes to infant mortality rates, and in particular in the African American community, it doesn't matter your socioeconomic status. And so the African American woman who has a high socioeconomic status, who's gone through college, perhaps has a graduate degree, still has a higher rate of infant mortality than a lesser educated white woman in our society. So what a lot of scientists are actually talking about is the impact of actual racism on a mother's body, that stress of racism is really having an adverse impact on the health of our children. So certainly being poor factors in, but being African American in this country also has an adverse effect on our infant mortality rates.
That makes absolute sense. What do we do about it?
Well, I think number one, we let people know what's going on. We're involved in preconception care. We're talking to young people before they even think about getting pregnant about how to take care of themselves. I tend to be a big advocate of even bringing back home economics. When I was in school, we had to take home economics because people taught us how to cook. They taught us the value of foods. And I think we're certainly sort of moving in that direction. The First Lady and her Let's Move campaign has had a great impact on the way people think about nutrition and exercise. And I think that as a nation, we've got to get serious about teaching our young people about how to eat. I was in Flint, Michigan a couple of years ago, and the kids there were telling me that they eat hot Cheetos and drink Mountain Dew for breakfast, and that's what they're going to school on, which is it's not going to work. They're not going to get educated that way. So as communities, we need to teach our children how to eat. We need to make sure that communities have fresh fruits and vegetables, that they have access to fresh fruits and vegetables, safe places to exercise, access to quality health care across the board.
That's absolutely spot on. Tanya Lewis Lee, thanks so much for the great work that you're doing and for being on the program tonight and sharing it with us.
You have in here when you are talking about the eighth area of activity, one of the terms, the greatest insult, another one that I've heard consistently, tragic arrangements. We also got gutter sex. We have sexually trashed and or sexually sewered. These are in the word guide, the terms I just used. Maximum racist aggression, that's in the code book. And then this is part of the explanation that you have in the word guide. He likes black females. She likes black males. He likes white women. She likes white men. And when you get down to the notes section for this particular or these phrases, you write that sexual intercourse and or sexual play between white persons and non-white persons during the existence of white supremacy is dominated and controlled by white supremacists and as such helps to make non-white people into sexual and political simpletons and misfits, extremely weak-minded and silly persons in regards to their understanding of white supremacy and its effects. And I just wanted to get your thoughts about the terms that you selected. They seem to convey a great deal of intensity about the incorrectness of these acts. And I just wanted you to comment on that pattern, on some of the terms that you chose to use to describe the incorrect sexual activities that racists promote.
It's because the strongest motivating force among people outside of just a simple survival, the first one, greatest motivating force, is the system of white supremacy, period, among the non-white people of the universe. The second greatest motivating force among the non-white people of the known universe is sex. So, since the white supremacists dominate the sexual activity of the non-white people of this planet, it is the white supremacists who determine which non-white people will be allowed to engage in sexual intercourse or sexual play with white persons, because the white supremacists control all of the nine areas of activity: economics, education, entertainment, labor, law, politics, religion, sex, and war. Because all non-white people are subject to the white supremacists in all of these areas of activity, including the second most powerful motivating force, which is sexual activity. So therefore, under the system of white supremacy, even when non-white people think that they have a choice of what they can do sexually with white people, they think that they are making this choice. They are not really making the choice ultimately, the ultimate choice, and even the situational choice that they are allowed to make is determined by the white supremacists. Just like in any prison system, I'll go back to the prison system again, because white supremacy is a prison system. The warden determines who's going to have sexual intercourse by setting up the situation where people can have it or not have it. If you're in solitary confinement, you're not going to have sexual intercourse with anyone. But if you're allowed to be in certain situations, work in certain situations, play in certain situations where you can have contact with another prisoner, then you can interact with that prisoner sexually if the warden of the prisoner of the prison has decided that this is a situation that's acceptable to him or her. And you think of the entire universe, the entire known universe, the entire planet that people are on this planet called Earth, the white supremacists dominate all of the affairs of the non-white people on this planet. So they dominate the affairs of the non-white people when it comes to sex, just like they do in all the other activities, the jobs, the politics, the religions, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So even when a black person, you might say, a non-white person, says that, well, I saw someone that I liked and I hooked up with them, to use a slang expression. And so this person liked me and I liked them and we got together and we have sex and nobody tells us what to do. The white supremacists have already predetermined that they will allow you to do this, sir and ma'am, if you are non-white. They have said that in this particular place at this particular time, yes, you can. In limited numbers, and they control the numbers, because that's a part of their sophisticated refinement of the system of white supremacy. In order to do what? In order to give the illusion that white supremacy is going out of business. They determine what the numbers of non-white people are going to have sexual intercourse with white people on this planet. They determine the numbers and the limits of those numbers. Otherwise, there would be no such thing as white supremacy. If non-white people can just go around saying they're going to have sexual intercourse with whatever white person they want to have sexual intercourse with, anytime, any place, under whatever circumstances, it just looks like they are making that decision. That decision's already been made before they even came close in those circumstances to a white person where they could have that quote-unquote liberty. And that was preordained by the white supremacists, even though it may not seem to be that way. Because you have to remember, the white supremacists are experts at magic. They are experts at illusion. They are experts at making something appear to be something that is not. Anybody who's ever been to a movie that's been produced by white supremacists or people associated with white supremacists knows how powerful illusions can be. So that's just another illusion when a non-white person thinks that they made a decision and then acted on that decision that had to do with sex with white persons during the existence of the system of white supremacy. Now, what effect does sexual activity between white and non-white have on the minds of non-white people? Because that's what it's aimed at. It's to embellish that illusion, to make them think that they are exercising some kind of power that they are really not exercising. Actually, the power is being exercised over them, and they are being weakened, not given strength. Why? Because of the system of white supremacy still being in place. If there were no white supremacy, it would just be male meets female and having sexual intercourse and engaging in sexual play. Even Stephen. But under the system of white supremacy, which is a prison system, all of this activity is controlled by the warden in order to do what? To make the prison system stronger by giving the non-white prisoners the illusion that they're really not in a prison because they're having such a lot of fun. Sex is a lot of fun to a lot of people. So they have the illusion that if at one time they did not have quote unquote sexual freedom with white people, then all of a sudden they have it. It's like in their minds being released from prison. But they're still in the prison. They're just being fooled by being allowed to do something that most likely previously they weren't allowed to do without being persecuted. That's why that particular act is the most devastating act on the minds of a non-white person. A non-white person who is having sexual intercourse with a white person in the system of white supremacy is becoming more and more weak-minded without them even knowing it. Now, they shouldn't be blamed for it. It's the white supremacists who should be blamed for that, because it's just another form of misuse. The warden having sexual intercourse with the prisoner. That's equivalent to child abuse in the system of white supremacy. If there were no white supremacists, no problem. But you're not supposed to take further advantage of someone who is already in a weak position. Anybody that runs a nursery knows that. And black people on this planet are in a nursery. They are weak. We're all weak. I'm weak. If you're classified as non-white and you're on this planet, you're in a weak position. So the person who has put you in that position comes and has sexual intercourse with you. You have become weaker, not stronger. Why? Because it's not on an even field. That's why. Prisoner and warden. Dictator and the one being dictated to. It's not a level field. It's not equal. Therefore, it's unjust activity against the non-white person.
Mr. Neely Fuller Jr., context of white supremacy. Before I check with Justice to see if she has some questions, I just wanted to make sure I got in for listeners. There's been a lot of this, which you term gutter sex, all the way back since the beginning of white supremacy, and that has not ended this system. And I suspect as long as it exists, racist man and racist woman will continue to sexually sewer their victims. But one point I wanted to get in, you said that under the refinement of white supremacy, racists will present, you know, some so-called couples, black, white person or non-white person with a white person, and present it as though this is a quality relationship. These folks are married, family, all of that. And you said that there are not even that many of these so-called, put that in quotes, relationships. There are not even that many of these tragic arrangements. It's a part of that illusion. If you see one or two in your mind, you'll think, oh, wow, this must be an area where they're really progressive. They don't have any racism. There are a ton of so-called, quote-unquote, interracial relationships, when that's not true at all. Just because you saw one or two, your mind will, you know, inflate that to make you think that the whole town is filled with tragic arrangements, quote-unquote, interracial relationships. Could you share a thought on that?
Absolutely. This is why I look at the schools. See, if this was true, if white people and non-white people are all in bed with each other having a good old time, as you might say, then it would reflect itself in every school everywhere. But when you go to most big cities in this area of the world, you see all black people in the schools. Now, this is a result of some sexual intercourse. Black people having sexual intercourse with each other and then being shuffled off to a side of town. Black people are assigned places under the system of white supremacy. Just look at that alone. That's just one example. Just the schools alone. You go into school after school in any so-called big city, you see non-white people and a sprinkling of white people maybe in most of the most congested areas of any city or the city itself. Pockets of white people here and pockets of white people there, with a few black people and brown people, as they say, scattered in between. But you have large concentrations in an educational institution. Even in 2011, who are concentrated in what has been called for the last 50 or 60 years, inferior schools. But these people that you see are the results of sexual intercourse. If there's any people there who are classified as non-white, who look like they're white, that's a result of sexual intercourse between a white person and a non-white person. But if that person looks like or has been registered as a non-white person, they're most likely going to wind up in a quote-unquote all non-white school, which means that somebody's playing some kind of...
When we talk about the issue of black religion, we have to deal with the concept of holiness. All religions claim to be holy to some degree, to be manifested with a certain energy or a power to take individuals from where they are to where they need to be spiritually. But this concept of holiness is something that is often misunderstood by lay people, and it is a concept that religions, although they claim to be the embodiment of wholeness, are totally neglectful of. The root word for holiness is to be whole. So for a religion to be whole, that means it has to deal with the whole circumference of challenges that face black people. You can't just deal with faith. You can't just deal with belief. You can't just deal with money collection. You can't just deal with Bible or Quranic study. To be holy is to deal with the whole list of problems that black people have. Simply stated, in order to be holy, you have to be dealing with the spiritual as well as the political needs of African people. But we find with most black religions, they are not holy. They do not deal with the whole spectrum of problems that affect black people. They limit themselves to one thing, preparing you to die peacefully and preparing you for life in the afterworld. And as a result of that, black people are crying out. We are spiritually destitute, we are spiritually hungry, and we are spiritually impoverished. Because when we go to the church, when we go to the mosque, when we go to the temple, we're coming out feeling no better than we did when we went in. Of course, there's a temporary feeling of euphoria. There is an emotional high that surrounds black religion. And for a little while after the service, one might feel as if they benefited from it. But just like when an alcoholic is no longer being influenced by the alcohol, or just like a cocaine user is no longer being influenced by the cocaine, once the high wears off, black people find themselves that they're right where they were when they started. Now, the spiritual poverty is very, very major. And one of the reasons why we suffer such spiritual poverty in black religion is because black religion has severed all ties with ancient African spiritual practices. Black religion has cut the umbilical cord from its spiritual parent, which is the ancient African spiritual system. When we look at religion and compare it to spirituality, Brother Curtis, we find that there's some very distinct features of spirituality that are not embodied in religion. And there's some very distinct features of religion that are not embodied in spirituality. For example, in religion, there's a concept of paying for forgiveness. When you read the Quran, when you read the Bible, when you study the culture of Christianity, the culture of Islam, and of course we know that the culture of Christianity is heavily influenced by European Christendom because they ruled the religion for so many years, and the same thing with Islam. It is heavily influenced by Arab culture because they have basically ruled their religion for so many years, which is another issue, because you cannot separate religion. You cannot separate religion from the culture that groomed it. You cannot separate religion from the culture that groomed it. And unfortunately, the culture that grooms the religion tends to pattern the religion after its own cultural belief system. So as a result of that, in Islam, you see a degree of sexism that's even higher than the degree of sexism you find in Christianity because of the sexist nature of some, but not all, Arab cultures. Very important that we recognize that. Just like in Christianity, the imagery is totally European. Why? Because it reflects the culture that nursed Christianity from its dark ages, and that would be the European culture. But let's get back to some of these differences. In religion is the concept of paying for forgiveness, the concept of tithes. In Islam, the concept of giving one-fifth of what you earn to the church, okay, or the masjid, in an attempt to expiate some of your sins. There's all types of sayings in black religion that talk about how you have to pay your way out of sin. But when you deal with spirituality, money is irrelevant. Money plays no role in spirituality. One may choose to spend their money for righteous causes, but the spending of money and the giving away of money in and of itself does not expiate one person from their sins. And unfortunately, we have a situation now where rich people have come to believe that they are sinless. How is it that so many rich people have come to believe that they are sinless? It's because they have been nurtured in religious systems that say the more money you give, the less accountable you are for your errors. So you have a lot of rich black people who are giving millions of dollars to churches in exchange for freedom from their sins, which couldn't be furthest from the truth, because both Muhammad, Jesus, Moses, all of these spiritual leaders who black people believe in and follow have argued repeatedly the point that it would be easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than for a rich man to enter heaven, which is ironic that we see so many black rich people who think they're going to heaven because they've given so much money away to the church, which is by design. Churches are businesses. Black people have a hard time accepting this. The masjid is a business. The Roman Catholic Church is a business. The Baptist Temple is a business. And most of the New Age black nationalist religions are also businesses. They exist to make money. And because they exist to make money, they always put features within the belief system that feeds the capitalistic agenda. Also in religion, we are taught that you have to find God. You must go on a search for God. But in spirituality, you simply are taught that you have to become aware of the pre-existing relationship you already have from the Creator. So there is no search for God because you are already one with God. You simply have to grow into the consciousness and awareness of your oneness with all that is, with your oneness with being, with your oneness with the supreme ruler of the universe. Now, the interesting things that religions do is they create a system where they put themselves between you and God. They put themselves between you and God, so the preacher becomes your attorney for God. The imam becomes your attorney for God. The temple leader becomes your attorney for God. Just like when you go into court, you need to have an attorney to argue your case to the judge, okay? Religion has set up the same sort of a judicial system when it comes to getting into paradise, where they teach you have to have an attorney in order to argue on your behalf to God that you have a right to the afterlife. And so the preacher is your attorney. The imam is your attorney. And they have very skillfully convinced black people that you have to belong to a church, you have to belong to a mosque, you have to belong to a temple in order for you to be on God's good side, which is interesting because most of these institutions, because they're not holy, many of them are not even on God's good side. So how in the hell is it necessary for me to belong to an institution that isn't doing God's work in order for me to be at peace with God? It makes absolutely no sense. Now, religions rule black people through the medium of fear. If you don't understand fear, you can't understand black religion. And this is another big difference between the ancient African spirituality taught by our ancestors and what is being taught in the church and the mosque and all other temples. And I've referred to the church, I'm talking about all black religions, not just Christianity. But they use fear. They inoculate and intimidate their followers with fear. And this fear is so debilitating, Brother Curtis, that the fear takes over the common sense and intellectual process of black people to the point where you are afraid to do what? Question the nonsense that you are being fed. You are terrified about questioning a possibility that maybe Muhammad is not the prophet of God. You are terrified about questioning the possibility that maybe what you're reading in the Bible is not the words of Jesus Christ. You are terrified about questioning the possibility that maybe the name Allah is not the only name for God. Okay, maybe Jesus was not the only son of God, but you're terrified. Why? Because the church and the mosque have taught black people that to question the doctrine, to become curious about the dogma, okay, is to earn God's displeasure, which means what? Religions are institutions of ignorance. And I know some of the listeners are going to have a hard time swallowing this pill, but in order for us to wake up, we have to get out of our paralysis of analysis. We are afraid to analyze the different systems and processes and leaders and behaviors that we see amongst the race. And in order for us to get from where we are to where we need to be, in order to make material progress, political progress, spiritual progress, economic progress, we first have to make intellectual progress. We have to improve our ability to think and think deeply about everything. And one of the things that we have to analyze is how religions function by way of the ignorance of its followership. Simply believe what I'm telling you. Don't question it. I was raised Islamically. My father was a Sunni Muslim, still is. I was a Sunni from birth until my 10th grade year. Then my father became a follower of the Shia tradition of Islam. My mother's family, so that's my paternal side, my maternal side, they were Christian. I have an uncle who's a minister. My paternal grandmother, my father's mother, who is the great-great-great, one of the great-great-great nieces of Frederick Douglass, she's a Jehovah's Witness. One of my paternal aunt's husbands, he was a member of the 5% Nation. I've had members of my family who are members of the Nation of Islam. So I've had a little bit of everything within my family system. And growing up, one of the things that always fascinated me, because I've always been a deep thinker. That's why I decided to become a psychologist, because I just love to think about the mind and study the way people behave. But as a young child, Brother Curtis, it always interested me how people would take something and believe it without any proof behind it. To take something and believe it without any proof behind it. But religion has that miraculous ability to make people believe. Why? Because people are inoculated with the fear of divine retribution for the possibility that you may not be believing in something that is true. But in spirituality, God is not this great retributionist. He's not an abuser of human beings. God does not want everyone running around being afraid of the supreme ruler of the universe. God does not function through a series of painful experiences in order to get you to recognize who the supreme ruler of the universe is. God functions on compassion, not punishment. Spirituality is about compassion, but black religion is about punishment. And then you have to look at the sexism in religion, Brother Curtis. And this sexism I find in nearly every black religion, whether it is a New Age black nationalist religious cult or whether it's a traditional religious a movement, whether it's Orthodox Islam or Christianity, there's really no role for the female. There's really no role for the woman in the church. There's really no role for the woman in Islam. There's really no role for the women in any of the religions that black people pretty much belong to, except the African traditionalist religion. So those who practice the Kemetic system, the Dogon, Yoruba, okay, you see that feminine principle. But Islam doesn't deal with a feminine principle. Christianity doesn't deal with a feminine principle. Now, some people would say, well, how can that be, Brother Umar? Isn't the church 85% women? Aren't black women converting to Islam every day? Yes, they are. I didn't say you couldn't be a woman and be a member. I didn't say you couldn't be a woman and be a member, but I said, where is the role for the feminine principle in the religion? In most black religions, the black woman is simply a slave to be used at the beck and call of the man, whether it's a sex slave, whether it's a kitchen slave, whether it's a house slave, whether it's a church slave. But your job is to follow the orders of your slave master, who happens to be the other men, and, of course, the imam or the preacher. So the woman is a slave in black religion. And it's very important that African people begin to recognize this. And one of the reasons for the degradation of the feminine principle in black religion is because our religions that we have, no matter how much we try to fine-tune them, we did not get African versions of those religions. We have the European versions of those religions. See, there's an African interpretation for Islam. How do I know that? Because when I'm in Africa visiting with brothers who practice Islam, their Islam is totally different from Negro Islam. Their Islam does not cut out the feminine principle. Their Islam does not do away with their traditional cultural practices. You see the same thing in African Christianity. Although I do have a problem that in African Christianity you do see a lot of white images, it's still there. But you still see a respect for traditional African cultural practices. You still see libation. You still see veneration to the ancestors. They did not cut that out on the continent. But over here, coming after 243 years of slavery, we have cut the umbilical cord that once fed African religion a steady dose of African spiritual nutrition. So black religions are suffering from spiritual nutricide. Black religions are suffering from spiritual nutricide. And if Christianity or Islam is going to be of any benefit to black people, it has to reconnect itself to the ancient African spiritual practices that our elders once upheld. Extremely important. Beliefs and dogma do not help people. Beliefs and dogma do not help people. I accept that there's one God and there's no other God and Muhammad is his messenger. Okay, that's your belief. I respect that. But guess what? That ain't treating your followers' depression. That's not healing that marriage that two of your believers are into that is being threatened with divorce. That belief ain't affecting that. Okay? Sheesh. It has nothing. Muhammad was the last prophet. Jesus was the son of God. Okay, that's fine and well. But how is that going to treat the spiritual poverty of your flock? It doesn't treat it at all. And the problem, Brother Curtis, is that black religion, its central component is dogma. Black religion is 85% dogma.
spiritual nutricide. Dogma doesn't help nobody. All dogma does is drive wedges between black people who believe something and other black people who don't believe it. That's all dogma does. It creates a narrow-minded view of everything. It breeds a certain religious arrogance. It breeds a certain type of religious supremacy. And so now that I'm Muslim, I go out into the world with the Quran, and I think I'm better than everybody else. There might be an elder there who is not a Muslim, but because I'm Muslim, I believe that I'm more right and exact than he is, and he's old enough to be my great-grandfather just because somebody told me at the mosque that we are right and everybody else is wrong. You see, the same thing in Christianity, the exact same thing. If you don't believe in this book, you are not on God's side. Where is the proof for that? And one of the shortcomings of our religion, one of the reasons why we have this dogmatic, conquering mentality as it relates to converting people, is because when you look at Christianity and Islam and how it's been used on black people, you'll see that it was forced on black people. It was forced on black people in slavery. It was forced on black people in Africa. And I know a lot of my Sunni Muslim brothers, bless their soul, they're still defending the Arab invasion of North Africa. There's still a sizable proportion of Orthodox African-American Muslims who are defending Arabs, claiming that Islam did not come into North Africa by way of bloodshed. And to them, I would only direct them to the scholarship of African scholars who lived during the Arab invasion of Islam. I'm not talking about people, historians who went back and studied. I'm talking about read the words of Africans who lived in North Africa at the time of the Arab invasion in the 6th and 7th century, and they tell you that the Arabs massacred millions, desecrated the culture, destroyed statues. They did the exact same thing that the Europeans would do a couple hundred years after them. No difference. But we're defending Arabs. Why? Because Islam was nurtured by the Arab. Can you have Islam without Arabism? Of course you can. But if you're going to take out the Arabism in Islam, you're going to have to put the Pan-Africanism back in. If you're going to take the Arabism out of Islam, you've got to put the Pan-Africanism back in. Why do I say that? Because some people are probably saying to themselves, Brother Curtis, why can't you just have Islam without any culture? Why? Because all religion is nursed in a cultural incubator. All religion is nursed in a cultural incubator. Muhammad was an Arab. Yes, he was an African who was an Arab, but he was still an Arab. So Islam was nursed in the cultural incubator of Arab culture. Christianity, when it was taken from the African priests and bishops, and stolen by the Europeans and Emperor Constantine, they took that religion and they nursed it in the incubator of white supremacy. You can't have religion without a cultural medium. Just like you can't have a human being without oxygen, you can't have a religion without a cultural incubator. It is ridiculous for black people to think that you can practice Islam free of culture. You can practice Christianity free of culture. And with African traditional religions, you see that you can't practice religion free of culture, but they don't try to hide it. They don't try to lie about it. In the Yoruba, in the Dogara, in the Dogon, they let you know the culture and the religion go hand in hand. The culture and the religion go hand in hand. But the Muslim is trying to act like Arabism is not a part of modern-day Islam. And the Christian is trying to act like white supremacy. It's not a part of modern-day Christianity. It has to be because it was nurtured in those cultural incubators. See, we are taught that there's a fixed system of worship in religion. If you're Muslim, you pray 5 times a day. If you're Christian, you go to Bible study, you go to church on Sunday, you read your Bible at home. But there's a fixed system. With spirituality, Brother Curtis, there is no fixed system. Everybody creates their own because we are all unique. We are spiritual beings having a human experience. We are unique. So guess what? Brother Curtis may pray in the morning. Brother Umar may pray at night. Brother Curtis meditates in the afternoon. Brother Umar meditates late at night. Brother Curtis only reads ancient African spiritual scriptures. Brother Umar might read the Bible or the Quran from time to time because he gains something out of that. Brother Curtis may not pour libations. Brother Umar pours the libations. It is unique to you, whatever it is you have to do to build that relationship. Some Africans choose to deal with the Ogun, the ancestral realm, to talk with their ancestors. Other Africans may choose not to do that. But it is what? Based on what you need in order to reach what? God consciousness. God consciousness. To become one with God. To become one with God is to become holy. The creation and the creator are one, Brother Curtis. They are holy. Where the man, the masculine principle, marries his queen, the woman, the feminine principle, the two halves, the yin and the yang, the numerator and the denominator, have become holy, which is another issue, Brother Curtis, because many black religions, because they are Obamaites, which is a contradiction, because you cannot be a follower of Muhammad or Jesus and be for the government. You cannot be a follower of Muhammad or Jesus and be for any government on earth, because both of them spoke against the inherent evil of conquering governments. So you cannot say, I'm for the President of the United States and be for Jesus. I'm for the President of the United States and be for Muhammad. It's a contradiction. It's a hypocrisy. But here's the point. Here's the issue. In order for a man to be holy, he got to get married. In order for a woman to be holy, she got to be married. That's African culture. That predates religion. Now, we know every religion teaches the same thing, but that comes from our culture. So then we have to ask ourselves something. If holiness can only be achieved by becoming one with God and by becoming one with your mate, how is it that the church has accepted homosexuality? How can the church accept homosexuality, Brother Curtis, if holiness, to become whole, is to join in marriage with a member of the opposite sex? How can you support marriage between two masculine principles? How do you support marriage between two feminine principles? If the vagina must meet with the penis for the ankh, or everlasting life, to be created, how can you support a system of marriage where the yin is not coming in with the yang, where the masculine is not marrying the feminine? How do you support that? That means your religion can't be holy. In fact, not only is the religion not holy, Brother Curtis, it becomes an agent of the devil, which is to do evil, because to support homosexuality is to do evil or to become the devil. And so black people have to begin to analyze these religious systems, because they're more evil than they are righteous. See, the goal of religion is to teach the superiority of a certain belief. The goal of spirituality is to nurture oneness with your creator. The goal of religion, superiority of belief, spirituality, oneness with your creator. See, religion, Brother Curtis, to be effective for black people, the reason why it doesn't work is, number one, as we stated, it's not holy. It doesn't deal with the whole spectrum of problems. But number two, in order for a religion to work for any people, it must be partial to that people.
Yes, sir.
In order for religion to work for any people, it must be partial to that people. Europeans used Christianity to enslave Africans. Arabs used Islam to conquer North Africa. Our African brothers and sisters who teach African traditional religions, they use it to improve upon the culture and improve upon the unity of the diaspora. It must be partial. The problem is Islam is not partial to black people. It's partial to the Arab agenda. Christianity is not partial to black people. It's partial to white supremacy. And that's why black people are not holy when they go to church and when they go to the mosque, Brother Curtis. Why? Because I come here to build a relationship with God. But in order to fight against police brutality, I got to go somewhere else. I come here to worship God. But in order for me to do something about my husband who's beating on me at night, I got to go to Women Against Rape. I come here and it was God. But if I need help for my son who's in jail for a crime he didn't commit, I got to go find a white lawyer to represent him. I come here to worship God. But guess what? If I have been a victim of molestation at the hands of a blood relative, I can't go to my pastor, to my imam, because they too cowardly to do anything about it. I have to go somewhere else. Look at that, brother. You have to split the institutions up because the church and the mosque don't want to deal with anything else except collecting your money and preparing you for the afterlife. It's amazing how they claim to be against evil but do nothing about it in the black community. Interesting. Interesting. Religion is about the masculine principle. Very interesting. Religion is about the masculine principle. Spirituality is about the balance of the masculine and the feminine principles. Religion has a limited concept of God. It's limited. Okay? You are given a picture of God in your mind. In Islam, they say that God has 99 names. There's 99 names for God. Well, guess what? I got news for people. There is no limit to the amount of names that God can have, because to limit the names for God is to limit God. There's no name that can properly define the unnameable. Allah isn't sufficient. You can use it if you want. Jehovah isn't sufficient. You can use it if you want. Elohim, Allah Dumare, isn't sufficient. You can use it if you want. Ptah isn't sufficient. You can use it if you want. But don't say there's 99 names. And after that, that's it. Well, if each word has roughly a dozen synonyms, that means 99 times 12 is going to give you a whole lot more than 99. But this is what we're taught, and we don't question this nonsense. Jesus, God, Yahweh, says who? These are simply names that people gave to try to capture a concept that cannot be captured. You can never truly understand the unnameable. You can simply only continue to increase your conscious understanding of the unnameable. That's the problem. In religion, you got to have a leader. In spirituality, you need no leader. There is no go-between. You never have to go to church. You never have to go to the mosque. And do you know why a lot of people spend so much time in religious institutions in the first place? Because they're looking for holiness. They're not whole. And they believe by going there and being around other individuals who believe what they believe, they can sooner or later become convinced of the accuracy of this inaccurate belief system. Why are so many women in church? Churches are meccas for single black women. You know why they're there? They're trying to get whole. They're not necessarily trying to find Jesus. They're trying to find a husband. But see, no one's dealing with this. No one's dealing with this. I look at the African-American Islamic community, and I look at how we have this situation of serial polygamy, where you got African-American Sunni men, Muslims, not all, okay, not all, but a good deal, who are marrying sisters today, divorcing them 3 months later, but the only problem is she's pregnant with a seed. But you've left her and went to another woman, and now you've impregnated her. So you got situations where you got a man who may have had 12 different wives in only 6 months. 12 different wives, 12 different children, and half the women on public assistance. Polygamy is supposed to benefit the women, not the men. When you have polygamy benefiting the men more than it's benefiting the woman, that's not polygamy. That's what you call a pimping arrangement. You're simply pimping the women. Polygamy was designed to make the women holy. Why? Because marriage is a requirement in African culture. And since there's more women than there are men, in order for women to become holy, spiritually and personally, they got to get married. So polygamy was instituted to help our sisters achieve holiness, the marriage of the masculine and the feminine principle. But brothers are taking polygamy and they are abusing it, which means it is no longer holy. And then we got to talk about the psychological problems in the church and the mosque. And I'm not limiting this discussion to the church and the mosque, but I mention those two as examples because most black people in America belong to one or the other. They're either Christian or Muslim. So I use those two. But we can talk about any of the black religions except for most of the African traditionalist religions. But one of the concerns I have about all religion, all black religion, and this goes back to my principle of religion needing to be partial to the people that it serves, this is the issue. All black religions, nearly every one, is integrationist based. Yoruba, yes. Integrationist based. The Kemetan system, integrationist based. I believe the Dogar, the Dogon, and
integrationist based. Christianity, Islam, integrationist based. Okay? You have a few New Age black religions that are exclusively black, but 99.9% of all black religions on the face of the earth are integrationist based, which means non-black people can join. That's the problem, because in order for religion to become a spiritual tool that black people can use to fulfill political as well as spiritual ends, it must be able to refuse membership to anybody who could threaten the sovereignty of black people over their own destiny. If the religion cannot refuse membership to anybody who can threaten the sovereignty that black people have over their destiny, then the religion is no good and is not holy, because it ain't going to help us achieve holiness. I got a big problem with African-American Islam, a big problem with African-American Christianity, and a big problem with African traditional religions, because no one has learned the essential lesson of slavery. The essential lesson of slavery is that whenever a European comes amongst you, they are coming to destroy you. And until religion accepts that and acknowledges that, we're not going to get anywhere. See, the political consciousness of black religion, Brother Curtis, is not keeping pace with the political times of black people. Narrow-mindedness. There's only one way to God. Islam says there's only one way to God. Christianity, one way to God. Judaism, one way to God. But spirituality says what? There's multiple paths to the Creator. And I'm going to throw this last concept out there, because you may have something or you may have some callers, and it is this concept of monotheism. We have to deal with the differences amongst traditional African religion and spiritualities, concept of monotheism, and the Arabized and Europeanized Islam and Christianity's versions of monotheism. According to Islam and Christianity, you are largely separate from your Creator. You are largely separate. The Creator does not live in you. The Creator is not manifested in you, despite Jesus saying that the temple of God is within, despite numerous references in the Quran to the Creator being closer to man than his own life being. But you're essentially separate. You're essentially separate from God. So you're not holy. Look at that. I want people to constantly look at the lack of holiness in black religion, to be whole, to be one. Holiness is oneness. But in African spirituality, what are we taught? There's multiple paths to the same goal. Multiple paths. It don't matter what religion you belong to. The only thing that matters is the quality of the relationship you have with the Creator, the quality of your consciousness, the quality of your oneness. But in the monotheism of African spirituality, Brother Curtis, it is a diffused monotheism. What do we mean when we say diffused monotheism? It means that the Creator is diffused into all creation. God exists simultaneously as separate and alone and as part of everything on earth. That's right. It is the separate and yet companion to all that exists. God is in the trees. God is in the water. God is in the animals. God is in life. God is in a rock. God is in the house. God is in the wood. God is in the oxygen, in the wind, in the thunder, in the lightning. Europeans misunderstand this. Black people misunderstand this. They take it to mean that Africans believe in multiple creators. They believe in water. They pray to trees. They pray to ants. They pray to snakes. No, we don't. We are simply doing what? Recognizing God's presence in everything that God created. Diffused monotheism. God is one with everything that exists, that which is animate and inanimate, that which breathes and that which does not breathe. That is a far, far stretch away from what Islam and Christianity are teaching. Now, your listeners have to ask themselves one question. Which route would get me to God consciousness sooner? Would I get to God consciousness sooner recognizing that my ancestors are alive and are one with the Creator and are still in my company even now as I speak? Would it get me to the Creator closer to understand that God lives in every living and non-living thing? So the animals in my house, the plants in my house, the healing stones in my house all have a speck of God's omnipotence?
That means I'm living in a holy universe, a holy world. Everything about around me emanates with God's vibration. Is that going to get you closer to God consciousness? Recognizing that God is not a man or a woman, so whenever we say he or she, we are absolutely wrong, and all we're doing is reflecting the human ignorance to try to reduce the infinite, unnameable, to a finite object? Or is it better to look at God as separate? Is it better to see God as a man? Is it better to believe in a God that doesn't allow you to communicate with your ancestors, or to believe in a God who runs the world through fear and retribution? Because if you believe in a God who runs the world through fear and retribution, Brother Curtis, then you should have no problem believing in white supremacy, because it also runs the world through fear and retribution. And I'll stop there.
Okay, Moses, we're back. If anybody have any questions or comments in regards to what we have heard so far, go ahead and follow the prompts on your phone and press 1, and we'll open up the phone line so that you can tell us what's on your mind. We just finished listening to Brother Umar Abdullah Johnson, a psychologist. Very, very powerful brother. I had an opportunity to meet him right here in Jacksonville, Florida. He's been also been a guest on my show, and I'm going to see if I can get him back here again. But in the meantime, do not forget, we are only a couple of days away from the Morris Summit being held right here in Jacksonville, Florida. Day one, I'll be out on the grounds, and we'll be deep frying some fish. And you come on out and get some of them fish and some of the good fresh vegetables that we're going to have for you. And we will be on the fish now. I'll be collecting donations and stuff because we got all that fish. We got to take care of that. But anyway, we'll be right here August the 16th through the 18th, right here in Jacksonville, Florida. So make your way on down here and make sure that you all make your way over there so I get a chance to meet you, and we'll get a chance to become acquainted to each other in person, over and above listening to each other over the airwaves on this radio broadcast. Okay? All right. Before we go into dealing with Rome, we'll be
it's
right
now
back.
Official, Moors. The brothers and sisters have been contacting me all over the United States, asking me, when are you guys going to get something to help us deal with the Internal Revenue Service? I'm here to tell you, officially, we do. Go to http://www.newfreehelpgroup.com. You see, to get rid of the Internal Revenue Service package right there waiting on you. Okay, now this is the breakdown of this thing. What we got to understand is the Internal Revenue Service is a private corporation not connected to the United States government as a country, and is operating illegally. Go to www.newfreehelpgroup.com, and if you're interested in doing that, go ahead and contact me before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. 904-303-9061 before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Get rid of the Internal Revenue Service packages, now officially available.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Chicago, Illinois, Common Law Lectures. What is today's date? Sunday the what?
18th.
Today's Sunday, March 18th, 2007. Yesterday when we left, this lecture that I'm doing is about how to survive the fall of Rome. yesterday I had to clarify for you that this was Rome and show you, and you know, the evidence that you can go and find and research. That's why I gave you the names, the years, and dates, and things like that to validate that what I'm telling you is accurate. Because in order for you to know that this is Rome, you have to see that for yourself. In order for you to survive the fall of Rome, you have to know that you are in Rome. And a lot of people were not aware that this was Rome. One of the things that we left here yesterday closing on was that Rome is a federal city in the sea, S-E-E, of Baltimore. And the word see means the jurisdiction of a bishop. Now, Baltimore, Maryland was some land that was secured by Lord Baltimore for the Vatican. Now, at this time, that area or a part of it is what was given over for Washington, D.C. The reason I'm bringing that up is because on July the 10th, write this down, of 1984, at the invitation of President Ronald Reagan, the smallest country in the world, which is the country known as the Vatican City, and its ruling head, which is the Pope of Rome or the Roman Emperor, the Holy Roman Emperor of the Roman Empire, officially opened its first embassy, which is called the Apostolic Nunciature of the Holy See. That was the official opening date, and it opened at 3339 Massachusetts Avenue, Northwest, Washington, D.C. That is the embassy for the Vatican. That's when they set up shop for real and made it official. It was all, they were always running stuff. But for those that didn't see it before, you really need to see it now. Yes.
Address again?
3339 Massachusetts Avenue, Northwest, Washington, D.C. Now, how many people have noticed the fascies? The fascies, I can't really draw it, but it's like a bundle of sticks. Usually whenever the president is talking, I'm not a very good artist, it's bundled together, a bunch of sticks. Dr. Cesar would call it a bundle of penises, knotted together. You guys know Dr. Cesar, right? She wrote some very powerful books. The first that came to people's mind was a book called Blacked Out Through Whitewash. It's a big book, and it's about $50 a book. And then her next biggest bestseller is a book called Drugs Masquerading as Food. That is a bestseller amongst European people. And this is another, because today we're talking about how to survive the fall of Rome. This is another great survival booklet, which the sister said she has some information that she is going to pass out regarding this book. It's called The Black Empowerment Survival Guide Now. You can get this book directly from Dr. Cesar at her website, which is cesar.com. Okay? And she will send it out to you. That's one of my dearest sisters. Now, my book back there, Piercing the Fog, is not about surviving the fall of Rome, but there are a few copies back there. Those are mostly for people that need to be awakened about the things that you already are coming to know, and they're not really listening to you. However, my strongest recommendation for you, for the people that you want to wake up that aren't trying to wake up, is Piercing the Fog. Are there any copies of that left back there, sweetie? Or are they all gone?
One.
the DVD, Piercing the Fog. There are some copies of Piercing the Fog in the back, and I already told you guys about today's special. It's today only. What I have back there today that will help you today to survive the fall of Rome is I have, and I really didn't even want to get in this. My baby was like, you need to tell them so they'll know what you're doing. But I have a 2-audio cassette set called Energy. It tells you what energy is, how energy moves, and how the things you think move the energy around you, and how you can start to control energy and take things from an invisible thought and make them become a physical reality. Mm-hmm. So that is back there. It's on 2 audio cassettes. It's only $10. Communication will help you to learn how to communicate better with others. When you're talking to people that you seem to never be able to make a connection with, when you understand the keys to communicating, whether you are visual, auditory, or kinesthetic, and the person you're conferring with is visual, auditory, or kinesthetic, that will help you to always be able to get through to people and not be bumping heads with people so often. That will help you with your survival. Opening spirituality is probably one of the better things I have back there. Basically, that is a compilation of all of the things that had to do with closing out personal power and moving into spiritual power, which is where you guys are going to have to start going in order to survive this fall. Your primary key here is going to be to find out what you should be doing for and about yourself. And you are going to find those answers inside yourself. The ancestors gave me other things that you need to do individually, as a collective, as a people, as an empire, but they want you to know that you are going to master the fall when you master you. Okay? Astral Emissions is also a very good book, a lecture that I did. It's a 3-disc CD set, and that is for people that want to learn how to astral project, where you do it deliberately and intentionally. Some you do it all the time anyway. You just do it when you're sleeping and you don't know you're gone and you don't know you're doing it. But if you want to get where you deliberately do it and you're going out there and you're coming back and you're conscious about the whole thing, that particular set tells you how to do that. There's some other stuff back there, but the PowerPoint is also very good. Those are the things that will help you the most to survive this fall of Rome. Now, what I want you to also know about this thing called Rome is the fasces, as I was telling you, is a symbol. Whenever George Bush or whoever the president at the time may be is speaking or addressing the nation, they always have the fasces right beside or behind the president. You will not see him doing a State of the Union address and the fasces are not there. Whenever you see the fasces, that is always a symbol or an ancient emblem of the legal authority of the Holy Roman Empire. Okay? So that is another key for you to know that you're dealing with Rome. But how many of you have heard that America is the great experiment? Has anybody ever heard that America is supposed to be an experiment?
Yeah.
Does anybody have a clue what that's about? Or have you just heard that and don't know what that means? America is the very first Fabronian nation. It's what we live in is what they call Fabronian, Fevronian, America. That is the great experiment. Now, what America is a Bellarminian commonwealth. Now, to me, Bellarminian, and I could be wrong. I haven't really gotten an opportunity to look this word up yet or break it down, should I say. B-E-L-L-A-R. Can you see this?
Yes.
Okay. B-E-L-L-A-R-M-I-N-I-A-N. When I look at Bellarminian, I see Bella, and I could be wrong, which means war. This is what I see, and I'm running out of space here to write this. I see army, and I see minions. That's what I see when I look at Bella Arminion. I see a warring army of minions. You know, but I could be, I haven't broken it down. That's when I just first look at the word BAM, that's what my eyes pick up. And that is really what the corporation called the United States of America is, a warring army of minions that goes around the earth just raging war against anybody and everybody that has anything they want to take, and they take what they want and leave the spoils, if they leave any spoils at all. But what it is, the concept of a Fibronium America, is involves the decentralizing of the Roman Catholic Church into independent, secular, national churches called states. And those states are ruled directly by kings and princes. You notice you don't hear queens and empresses. You don't hear females. But by kings and princes united under the Pope and paying tribute to Rome or the Roman Catholic Church, Vatican. That's what a Fibronian America is. This is the very first Fibronia. That's what the experiment was about. Now, this is the correct political term for it. America is the first Fibronian Bellarminian Democratic Republican Church State. That's what it is. We are the first. Okay? Now, this particular church, as I said, they're paying all this tribute to the Holy Roman Empire, or the Roman Catholic Church, or Roman Catholic Vatican. And a lot of people need to come to the understanding or the knowledge that the Rothschilds, which are Fernians of the Vatican Treasury, now, a lot of people, remember how I was telling you guys last year, for those individuals that made it last year, that the Jews and the Christians are really the same game, but everybody thinks that they're opposing one another? And I said, if you don't comprehend that they're the same game, then why was it they originally were called Judeo-Christian? And why is it that the Pope of Rome wears a yarmulke like any other Jew? You know the little skull cap. I mean, to me, there are things that you may not understand, but a lot of it is just in your face if you're looking. So Rothschild means red shield. That's H-I-E-L-D-S. I know you guys can't make that out. I'm up here up on it, and I can't make it out. Anyway, back in the day, when Rome was, when Caesar's soldiers would go to war, they would go out into battle and they would have red shields that were painted with red. So that's where the red shield concept comes from. Now, the Vatican Treasury holds all of the imperial wealth of Rome that they have stolen from melanated people all over the planet. And the Rothschild family are the guardians of that. And they're supposed to be Orthodox Jews that are guarding the treasury for Roman Catholic so-called Christians. To me, there's something to be investigated there and something that you guys would probably want to get a little bit more clarity on. I want to get into another concept that you want to know about these Templars before I get into the concept of giving you your the things that the Ancestors want you to start doing to save yourselves from this fall. What I'm doing now is connecting today to yesterday. They did a trading places with us, and I'm going to show you that so that you see how that was done. This is what the Templars were really all about. The Templars, who were supposed to be Jesuit Jesus priests, they believed that Jesus would never, if he were in fact God or God's son, would never lower himself to coming to earth in the form of a so-called human being. And if he really was God or the Son of God, he wouldn't have done that. And since he did do that, then he must therefore have been an imposter. And as an imposter, that made him a false prophet. So, if he's a false prophet, he's of no value. And as being someone of no value, then he deserved to be crucified anyway. Now, they felt that he was sent by the powers of so-called darkness, and nobody really should care what happened to him. So, in the Templars' opinion, the true God was not Jesus, but his evil twin brother, or evil brother, which may not have been a twin, I may be wrong on that part, whose name was Sataniel, S-A-T-A-N, A-E-L. And this is who they believe in. Now, they feel that Sataniel is supposed to have lordship over the material world, and he alone can enrich mankind. Now, who's mankind? Did you say us?
No, them.
He alone can enrich mankind, which really has nothing to do with man. Sataniel is represented by the Kabbalan goat head, or you see this pentacle I have around my neck? When they turn it upside down, that's supposed to be symbolic of a goat head. But a lot of people used to wonder, well, why do Moors fly the Moorish flag, which is a green flag or a red flag with a green star in the middle, upside down? It looks like a satanic goat worshiping thing when you do it that way. The reason the Moors are flying the flag upside down is because our nation was in distress. Whenever a nation goes under attack and they are having severe calamity, they turn the flag upside down as a sign to others that we're in trouble and we need help. So when the Twin Towers, for example, were taken down in New York, if this nation was doing what it was supposed to do, and I don't know if they were or not because I don't watch the news, then the so-called United States of America flag should have been turned upside down because we went under what they claimed was an attack. You understand? Okay. However, the way this particular nation of people, the Adamites, or the Templars, or the Jews, or the Christians, or whatever you guys want to call them, Europeans, white folks, call them what, pink people, I don't know. And don't think that I dislike pink people. My stepmother was pink. I have sisters and brothers that are pink, and I love them. I have one sister, she's blonde haired with greenish eyes, and she passes every day for white, and that works for her. Her son looks white, and he used to date a very dark sister, but now he married a white woman that had children and has white-looking children with her. They're doing the wrong thing. One of the things that people want to know, we were discussing something yesterday at dinner last night, all of us and Omari, and he was saying our people still haven't figured out that we need to apologize to Europeans for the way they were treated. And I was telling him, you kind of have to understand that our people did do an apology for the treatment. What our people did, according to the ancestors, is they deliberately put themselves into a dormant, unconscious state. And as a result of that, it's like that story about the tortoise and the hare. You're the tortoise. You can always stay in front. But here comes a little hare. In order for the hare to get half a chance in this race, the tortoise had to go to sleep. So we deliberately went into this unconscious, we don't know, we don't remember squat state, so they could evolve spiritually. spiritually and catch up. Mm-hmm. However, now one of the things that some of us did, and I think this is where a lot of the disagreements occurred, a lot of our people did not feel that we were supposed to crossbreed with them because they were, since we made them out of part animal, it was against the law to have intercourse with an animal. However, there were some people that felt like, but this animal has been genetically enhanced and modified to be very manlike. And in order for them to continue to become more man, we're going to have to crossbreed with them to breed more animal out, breed more melanin in, and breed their tails away. That, I think, is where a lot of the conflict between us came from. Has anybody ever heard how the Moors were fighting amongst themselves?
Yeah,
that
right.
was something kind of so. Some people went on and did the interbreeding, but Europeans did not understand what we were trying to do for them. What we were trying to do for them was make up for the mistakes we made with them. Making them was a mistake. Enslaving them was a mistake. Treating them badly was a mistake. And the only way to make amends for that that we could come up with was to go in a dormant state, in a sleep unconscious mode, and become like dead people so they could evolve spiritually, and for those that wanted to go there, to interbreed with them to darken them up. As they got more melanin and got darker, they were going to become more man and less a kind of man. Do you understand? As they got darker, they were going to get more soul, they would get more compassion, that would make them, as we were talking about yesterday, with some of the movies like a new version of The Time Machine and Queen of the Damned, to make them day walkers, for lack of a better word. You get them the melanin, that gets rid of the blue eye and the inability to see that well at night, or the inability to see that many colors, or the because they have color blindness, they have night blindness, that's a blue eye problem. They don't hear the like we hear certain things, they don't hear the beats that we hear because they need more melanin to pick up what we pick up. You feel more when you have more spinning superconductors. However, instead of them breeding in, as the Holy Bible talks about, I forget which version of which book, but one of the books talks about them needing to be grafted in. They were supposed to get grafted in. And early in the day, we were grafting them in, and then somebody on their camp decided, no, we're going to have miscegenation laws, it's against the law, to interbreed and crossbreed, and I guess some people on our side made that same decision. But the fact remains, there were those that were breeding with them and those that were not. Those that wanted to go into the unconscious state and those that didn't. So we didn't agree on how to handle it. But at any rate, they did not, most of them did not take the time to evolve spiritually. And a lot of them refused to breed in and be grafted in. We got to keep the white race pure, is what they say. At the end of the day, we knew they only had a certain amount of time to do that. And again, they did not understand what we were trying to do for them. Now, those of you that saw, what is the name of the movie? Rabbit Proof Fences, they spun it around and said, we didn't understand what they were trying to do for us. We didn't need them to do anything for us. We were trying to help them out. If, in fact, they had worked on evolving spiritually, like a lot of the so-called New Agers, they may be able to make the transition into the amplified frequencies because the world is getting ready to transition into a higher frequency. Anybody that's not ready to shift up into the higher frequency is not going to make it. You're going to be trapped for I don't know how long, maybe forever. Now also, those individuals that did not graft in, because they could spiritually evolve or graft in to evolve, they had two options. They refused to graft in, so now they're left out. And now they want to make a mad dash on the sisters, and the European men want to hook up with the sisters. It's too late. You need a few generations to breed and graft in. You need to hook up with a melanated individual and have a melanated half-breed child, and your child needs to hook up with a melanated individual to make an even darker child and keep darkening up until you get grafted in. They refuse. They're stuck. They're lost. They told me to let you guys know that we are not supposed
to worry anymore about them or what they're doing. Who cares what they're doing? But, oh, George Bush got rid of the habeas corpus. But, oh, they have the concentration camps. The Augusta said, so what? Who cares what they have? We are not supposed to go out and march any more marches for them. We are not supposed to go out and join any more wars and militaries and fight any more battles for them, because we helped them fight every battle that they've ever fought, and they only fought the battles the way they fought them and halfway won them because we helped. We helped them in their revolution, their fight against Britain and France. We helped them in the Civil War, which they said was about us. It wasn't about us. It had nothing to do with us. They just said that so we could help, and when we helped to fight war for liberty, we still didn't get any. We helped them in the Korean War, the Vietnam War, the Japanese War, the Afghanistan War, the Iraqi War, and we keep helping them fight wars that have nothing to do with us. We are at a point now where the Ankhester said, try to not allow any more of our children to go fight the battles for Europeans, because those battles are not our battles. We have our own battles. We were fighting for them for liberty overseas, and we didn't have any at home. Our brothers were in militaries that were still calling them niggers, still sitting them in the back of the bus, and when they came out here, they still had to sit separately in trains. A lot of these brothers were in the soldiers, and they were still treated segregatedly and not given any respect, and all they were trying to do was help. And all along, we were trying to work with them, and they kept treating us like we were the enemy. We were not the enemy. You understand?
Sure.
Okay, so they wanted me to, and as I'm speaking, they'll drop on me what I'm supposed to be dropping on you. But what are you guys handing out? Oh, this that they're handing out now is a spiritual security method. Let me just get it here. It's 3 pages that I did, and it would go very well with the Energy CD. It's not required to get it, but when you get an opportunity, I've given you guys some things that are going to help build you up spiritually, to help you amplify your frequencies for the amplification of that is occurring on Earth. It's certain sounds that you do that you already know, that you're already familiar with. Like, who has never heard the sound, ah? That's a sound that does something when you say it, okay? When you utter the sound, ah, that sound is a universal sound for energy. If you're ever very tired and very fatigued, then you just go, ah, you can amplify your energy and get rid of fatigue, okay? So you need to understand what the different sounds are about and what else is on here. Now, the next 2 pages are going to scare the heck out of some people. That's why I gave several methods on it. There are several ways to protect yourself. And I've had people always say, well, man, this is like witchcraft. I don't want to do this. Fine. There are at least 10 to 15 different things that you can do to protect yourself. You don't have to jump on one that looks like witchcraft to you. Like somebody said, I don't want to take a glass jar and piss in it and put pins and knives and razor blades and sharps in there and bury it under, fine. Then you run a bath water, pick some white roses and throw white rose petals in the water. Can you do that? That is a protection device. How many people have ever taken bath in Epsom salt? That is a protection device. You know, most of you do it to alleviate pain, but the crystals emit a frequency. Then what they do is they modify or change the frequency that's going on with you. They draw out frequency that's not supposed to be there so you can become more of what you're supposed to be, and that's what takes the pain away. When you're in pain, it's because there's something going on with your frequency that's not supposed to be going with your frequency. And frequently it occurs with something you're thinking or something you're saying that causes how you're feeling. Do you understand? Okay. So, I mean, you know, some of these things, you know, you can do, and some of them you don't have to do. On page 2, the very top thing is breathing. Can you do that? Yeah. Okay. I mean, because some people, you know, when they look at it, because the first thing is, the witch's protective talisman, they just tossed the whole page. It's like, come on, man, look at it. I'm sure of all the things listed here, you can find at least one thing on here that you would not have a problem with, no matter what your religious affiliation may be. Okay? And that's to help you out. Again, anything you get from me, take what you can use from me and discard the rest, because I don't know everything and I may be wrong about anything. It's like, well, you know, the sister's got good information, but she was wrong on that part. That part, throw it out. Don't use anything that you feel I'm wrong about. You comprehend? Does anybody have questions before I move on about what you were just handed out? Okay. I don't want y'all talking about me behind my back, dude, man. Did you see what the sister gave us? I don't want to even read on there, on the camera, what someone was on there. I know some people are like, well, God, can you share with the audience that's watching that didn't get what you gave? I can't do it. So there's stuff on there that I wouldn't put on DVD. I just wouldn't do it. If we have time at the end, I'll try to read over some of the sounds, but I don't know if we're going to have time. Back to what I was saying about Satanael and what's going on with them. Baphomet is the goat or the pentacle upside down. And Suzar has a fabulous book out called, I think it's called Baphomet Christ.
Yeah, Baphomet Christ.
You have it?
Yeah, it's cool.
Yeah, those of you that, you know, want to know, because what is everything going on? Everything about us is reversed. So if the pentacle is upside down the way they're ruling the world, how should it be for you as a melanated person?
Right side up.
Okay? Right. Now, and the pentacle or pentagram or five-pointed star is a very powerful piece. It's a very powerful piece. It's also symbolic of raising the four levels of energy, earth, air, fire, water, and raising those up from the four points, up through the top point where you start to evolve spiritually, because you have to come from down up and go from here.
Fifth element.
Huh?
Fifth element.
Yeah, the fifth element, exactly. Precisely. All right, now, the Baphomet, the court, according to them, when some of them were cast out, because those of them that we were able to train, remember I said yesterday they were very unteachable people. We had a hard time teaching them to bathe. We had a hard time teaching them to speak, to just get them to do the language. It was very difficult. A lot of them still don't speak as well as they should. A lot of what they call Ebonics is really just Southern drawl from the way Europeans spoke English to us, and us trying to speak it back to them because it wasn't our language. Do you understand? Because we were speaking something else when they got here. Most of our people learned how to speak English from so-called white folks. That's the way they spoke. So if the Ebonics is broken up, they broke it up. You got it? All right. But those of them that we were able to school up, we incorporated them into our societies to a certain extent. Those that we couldn't work with very well, we put them in areas that people call ghettos. And those that we could do absolutely nothing with were left on the other side of the Great Wall and pushed off in the caves. Like, man, just put them back into the wild, because they're wild and we can't work with them. We couldn't civilize them. So some of them that were cast out, according to them, they say evil spirits appear to them in the form of he-goats. This is what they say. And that the he-goats gave them secrets to controlling the world and to share with them anything that they wish to know. This is what the he-goats claim to be going to do for them. It also says that, has anybody heard of this Jewish holiday called Yom Kippur?
Yeah.
Do I need to write it?
Yeah.
Where's the marker?
No.
No? Well, somebody said yes, so that means yes. If any one person says yes, that means yes in here. Y-O-M-K-I-P-P-U-R. I heard this a long time, and it just didn't add up. Until very, you know, when you put it, like I said, when I put a question out, the answers go bam. I'll be looking for something else and find the answer to the question. The Yom Kippur is all about the trading places. that they did with our people. Mm. This is a particular ritual where once a year they take two goats. Apparently one of them is what you know as white and one of them is what you know as black. They kill one of the goats and they take the blood from the goat they killed and sprinkle it onto the goat that is left alive. Okay, that'll work. And they send the goat off into the wild or the wilderness, which is symbolic of sending it into the world. The goat that is left alive is the scapegoat that escaped.
Yeah, yeah.
And it is supposed to take and bear all the sins of the so-called Jewish people that you guys call white people. However, what it really is a magical ritual that they do every year so they can keep trading places with us. We run around here as their scapegoats. I have a little list, and I hope I can get to it quickly, because I want to share with you guys some of the things that we have been running around bearing for these people. The Ankhest has wanted you guys to know this, and I'm assuming that's why they gave it to me, so I could give it back. If I can't find it, I'm going to have to shoot from memory, and I don't like shooting from my head. Right here. The original black man is who? Them.
Yeah.
Who's the black man today?
Yeah.
So apparently, so they claim us.
Yeah, right.
The original Negro was them.
Yeah.
Somehow today, the Negroes are us. The original colored people were them. Okay. Meaning, they have red eyes, green eyes, blue eyes, or whatever.
Right.
Blonde hair, black hair. We're not rainbow-colored people.
No.
They look more like rainbow-colored people. The original ghettos, who lived in the original ghettos? Who knows enough about history to know that? The so-called Jews. Now, today, who's supposed to be in these ghettos? Us. Who were the original Slavs? S-L-A-V. The slaves. Them. Now, who's carrying the slave story? Us. They kept saying, oh, black people have the Mormons. Black people have tails. Do we have tails?
No.
Have you ever seen anybody other than brothers that have the ones in the front? I mean, how many people that you know that look like us that have tails? I've never encountered any melanated individual with a tail. I know people that have encountered European people that have tails. Some still in place, some that have been cut off.
Right.
Now, again, PBS ran a special called The Family That Walks on All Fours. And they show the backs of two pink people, naked butts out, with the long tail still attached, hanging from the back. But they keep saying that we have tails. Now they keep calling us what? Monkeys and apes. What did we make them from? Monkeys and apes. Now, they are the lovers of dogs. I told you guys yesterday about how much, and you guys know how much they love dogs. Man, they dogs can be up on the table. They can be eating dogs, licking them in the face. They trying to eat. But they like, okay, dogs. And my brothers today are calling themselves one another what?
Dogs.
Calling
each other dogs.
Okay? Who are these? You know, they are some of the best and coldest killers you ever saw, but they keep calling my brothers the killers. They keep calling us the thieves when they've stolen entire continents, entire countries, and entire tribes of people. But we're thieves. Who's the thief then? They are. The original thugs and gangs. What did I tell you yesterday about how they were running to get away from their situation? They ran into other people's villages and communities, and they came with a gang mentality, like they show in Gangs of New York. But who are they calling gangs today? My brothers. So, we're called the criminals, the dealers, but the last time I checked, it's the Europeans that have the planes and the boats and the friends that are customs officials that they can look the other way or pay them off. Do you know any young brother in the hood that got it like that they can pay off a customs official and get any massive amount of drugs here? You know any brothers that got customs officials that are friends that'll look the other way? And the average brother can only look so far because somebody white is looking over his shoulder, or so-called white. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
How many brothers you know that got the boats and planes flying anything here from anywhere?
No.
So the drugs, the coke, the weed, it's all getting here from somewhere. And it finds its way to our community, but we're not bringing it there, and yet it's there.
Mm-hmm.
So if all of these things are the crimes and sins of them, then in order for everything to be applied to us now, and we accept it, and we claim it, somebody has done what they always tell you not to do. They performed a magical ritual under Yom Kippur with these goats, and they got a scapegoat, and that's symbolic of what they're trying to portray in the real world. And did it work?
Yeah.
Very well. So you guys, I just wanted to point, how many people saw it that way before?
Always.
You always saw it that way? He's good. He's good. I didn't catch it. It took a minute for me to figure that part out. Let me make sure I'm covering this here. Yeah, but the August wanted to know that was the trading places thing that we did. The, our people even call themselves Adam.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Are we Adam? Are we from Adam? Do we have anything to do with Adam? We are not Adam or Adamites at all. Again, the trading places game from the robbers, the plunderers, the hypocrites that are the common sort, and we bought it and fell for it, hook, line, and sinker.
They did a movie called Trading Places.
Oh, they do a lot of movies about what's going on, but our people, because we are clear, we see it and we don't. You know, you see and you don't see, and you hear but you didn't hear it. We've heard of I've heard of Yom Kippur for years and the two goats for years. But I just figured this out a couple of weeks ago. And the Ankhester said, duh, wake up. Now that you get it, tell everybody else. Because once you get it, it's like, now once you know, the game is like over. It's it. That's it. That's a part of the frequency changing and our people evolving. As you get clear in the far way you're going. And you can get there when you can see where you're going. Otherwise, we're going to be running around in circles, revolving. We are not here to revolve. We are here to evolve and spiral up, not run around in circles, which is what we've been doing, and this is why. As the brother was saying yesterday, brothers, he was talking about cycle or psych, the word psych meaning soul. What is another word for Mercury? Psychopompous. Do I need to write this down?
Yeah.
Can I erase this?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Is it possible to get some soap and water, or did you guys already try that with this board?
We're
trying
now.
I want to make sure that this can be legibly seen on the camera. Psycho is one word, but I'm writing it big because the board is so gray looking. If I write it any smaller, I don't think you'll be able to see it. Psychopompous is one word. The word hell means anything Greek. It also means, if you look in a dictionary, and those of you that have dictionaries that have never looked up the word hell, you should. It also means that anything that is not easily comprehensible, anything that's coded, that requires decoding, that's hard to understand. What are the laws and the codes that we're dealing with?
Hell.
They're hell. Most of what's going on is so complicated. A lot of people are trying to do is get free, and they can't get free because they're having such a hard time figuring out what this game is, because it's not easy to comprehend. But as one of my sisters said, Yafa, they're Ma'a. Y'all have heard me talk about her. Ma'a thing is, look, they're chimps. How hard could it be? We're melanated. The problem we're having is we're thinking too hard. That's her speech. She'll tell you quick. We're more, so we do more and think more and figure there's more to it.
Mm-hmm.
Her thing is they are chimps. There couldn't possibly be that much to it. It's probably so simple, we're missing it because we're just looking too far, and we're looking out there, and it's right here. You get it?
Right.
So, what this is supposed to do as those that are not appropriate, which is what you guys are all in the process of becoming. Appropriate means one's own. You're going to evolve to your own thing, your own thought, your own frequency, marching to your own drummer, following your own heart and gut, and feeling your own way. You do not need leaders. You are a leader. If anybody's going to follow anybody, they need to follow you, because you're not going to follow anybody. That's not what you're here for. Your ancestors didn't go through what they went through for us to be trying to find some savior for us. We don't need a savior. You save yourself. However, those individuals that follow, thank you, sweetheart. Now, that is so much better. That is so much better, Dave. I appreciate that. That'll be helpful for those that are looking on the video camera. Those individuals that continue to follow Mercury or Europeans and their way, or the Roman Catholic Church and the Vatican and the Fabronians of America, because what is America supposed to be? The light of the world. Everybody's supposed to follow this country, and this country is what I would consider Satan's hell hole. Mm-hmm. Some of the most obscene, unnatural things occur in this country.
Great Satan.
Who said that? Say that again. Great Satan.
The Great Satan.
America is like the Great Satan. This is like... And anybody that wants to follow the way things are done here is going the wrong way.
That's right.
However, the individuals that keep following Mercury are going to wind up stuck in hell with Mercury, because Mercury don't want to be there alone. They need melanated folks to go with. Huh?
Misery loves company.
She said, the sister said, misery loves company. That's true. The individuals, however, that are left behind... How many times have you heard that?
Yeah.
Those are going to get left behind. Those are going to be left behind. Those that get left behind that are not following Mercury, those are the people that are worth messing with. That's going to be you guys, because you're clear enough now, I hope, to see the game that we were all so stuck in. And it's a bigger game than we thought, but it's not as big as we thought, because everybody that I talk to, I know all of you now that I'm bringing this all stuff to your attention, yesterday, today, last year, didn't you already know it?
Right.
You just didn't see it that way.
Right.
And now that you see it, it's like, how come I didn't catch that before? Why didn't I look in the dictionary before? And I've seen these brackets, but I didn't see the brackets. You've seen them, but you didn't see them, right?
Right.
Tell the truth. Right. But so the game is there. So now the jig is up for them when it comes to you guys. So hopefully you can get your people to catch up, but if they ain't catching up, the Ancestors has got a plan that they want you to do. What they want you to know is your answers, again, are inside yourself. They are not in the church.
That's right.
And if you keep following the church, and who's the church?
Rome.
The whole body, Rome and the whole body of what? Christian believers that are ruled over by who?
The Pope.
And the Roman Catholic military soldiers that are preachers, priests, nuns, bishops, and the like. The Jesuits are the army, the severe army.
Yeah.
But
military arm.
Now, these people had a tendency to go around the world in the name of what? They come along in the name of peace.
Jesus Christ.
As missionaries. Oh, we come in peace. There was a science fiction movie once called Come in Peace or something like
There's a better movie called The Missionary with Robert De Niro. He was younger in it. That's an excellent movie.
There's a better movie called The Missionary.
The Missionary, and they came in peace. The missionary came first and the mercenaries came second.
Yes, right.
Well, that's exactly what really happened all over the planet. And then the hell and the confusion occurred.
Right.
So now we just got to get clear and get out of the confusion. We're not going to keep following this critter into hell anymore. Something else that our guest has wanted me to bring to your attention that some people are getting angry about. Back in the, I think in the 80s or 90s, how many people are familiar with the fact that the Seminole Indians in Oklahoma had decided one day, I didn't see you slide in back there, honey. How you doing? They had decided one day that the so-called black Negro type Indian ain't a real Indian, because they had all this money from the so-called federal government.
Yeah.
Now, a couple of weeks ago, there was an article in the paper that basically said that the so-called Cherokee of Oklahoma is trying to play the same game. These black Indians of Negro ancestry aren't real Indians, therefore they're not entitled to the rights or monies of real Indians, so we're going to remove them from the rolls. How many people have heard that? And a lot of people got what about it? Because you know that you're what they call the so-called Indians. You know that was your people.
Right.
A lot of our people got P.O.'d. The Oncaster said, don't. Forget them, screw that and what they're talking about. This is what they wanted me to bring to your attention. One, slap them upside the head with their own garbage. When they say the black Indians aren't real Indians, you need to whip out their dictionary and go, I think black says pale. Look at you. And here's a definition of American that says copper-colored racist. You get your copper penny out. Let me get my copper penny out. You tell me, am I the black Indian or are you the black Indian? This is what the Augustus told me to tell you.
Come on.
And when they talk about the Indians of Negro ancestry from Africa, isn't that what they're saying? The Augustus told me to tell you this for them. The Europeans are currently doing all this DNA and genetic testing and tracing. Let them tell it. Everybody's traced back to Africa through Lucy.
Yeah.
So if I ain't a real Indian because I'm traced to Africa, you ain't a real Indian because you traced there too.
That's right.
The Augustus told me to tell you guys, don't get bent about it because they ain't talking about nothing. They're just doing that to upset you and throw your frequency off. Because when you get a little angry, your frequency gets a little distorted and your thoughts get a little scattered. They said, don't listen to the pink man and what he's talking about. Don't follow him and what he's doing. Just stay on your focus. Stay in your 360 degrees because you have to be an unmoved mover, which means you cannot be moved by him and his games and his garbage. Do you comprehend? All right. Now, there's something else that they wanted you guys to know. There's a legal term called Aboriginal title and a legal term called Indian trust. They said you don't want to get hung up in that too deep because both of those keep you off and out of your stuff. And the so-called, they wanted me to also bring to your attention that the so-called, What is it called? Hell, it'll come back to me. They just snatched it right out of my head. I guess I said all they wanted me to say on that. It'll come. If they want me to give it to you, it'll come. Somebody will ask a question about it or something. Indigenous.
Yeah.
They said don't mess with that word. They said you only want to mess with it if you need to use it legally for legal purposes because you may be able to get whatever you're needing to get from them legally, but you're not indigenous. This is what they told me to tell you about it. I'm going to write the word here. I-N-D-I-G-E-N-O-U-S. Turn to indigenous in your dictionary now.
I looked up that term last time when you told us to look up an
Autochthon.
Autochthon, yeah.
And
indigenous came up.
Yeah, well, they're trying to connect back. It is and it isn't, okay? Just like if your name could be Michael. If your name is Michael and somebody calls you Mike, you know they're talking to you, but is Mike your name?
No.
No. So, you know, just be clear on that. Now, I want you to look. Remember I told you when you're looking up a word, you should look up every word above and below the word. When you get into the brackets of indigenous, you'll see Indy plus Gina.
Right.
And indigen with the A in a parenthesis. And it'll also, is that right? Indy plus Gina. But look at the word above it that says indigene.
Right.
Indigene. That says indigenous or native. Also indigen. And look in the brackets. It says indigen. No, that's not even it. Indigen. Yeah, that's right. That's right. When you look up indigen, because that's what it says in the brackets, right? Or somewhere in there to say, yes, baby. Loud enough to be on this mic, handsome, because we want to hear what you got to say always.
You put in front of a word in the English language, you really mean out.
I know.
That it's not of. So indigenous, it means not of the gen race.
Thank you, brother. See? I'm going to give him some more to go with that. When you look at the word indigent, I-N-D-I-G-E-N-T.
T, yes.
Deficient, needy, destitute.
Wow.
And when you get in the brackets, doesn't it say indigens, which is this word with an S, indigens, which is the root of this word, indigenous, indigens. Indigene, indigenous, indigent is all the same word, and it means needy.
Wow.
And when you get down into the word, look down below that to the word indigne. I-N-D-I-G-N.
Not worthy.
It means you're not worthy.
Unworthy.
And what do the Europeans go around this world taking everything from melanated people saying? You don't deserve it. You ain't worthy. We should have it. And they did that because they have that, what do you call that? The green-eyed monster. And that Ain al-Hassad, the blue-eyed envy. Do they hate you?
Yes.
With a passion.
No.
No.
They're just jealous of you. They want what you want, and they want to be what you are, and they want to have what you have, but they're not you. And they're upset because they're not you. They're very angry about it. We gave them the opportunity to become us. They rejected it. And it says that in the Bible. It says something about they rejected the builder's cornerstone or something. The cornerstone of the foundation. They rejected it. So they can't say that we didn't try to help them. So some people are like, well, we owe them an apology, and we still haven't learned our lesson. They don't understand what we were doing for them, and a lot of us didn't understand what we were doing for them. Now do you guys kind of see what we tried to do and how we tried to make up for the error of our way? You don't see it still. It's okay if you don't. It's okay. It'll come. Now, there's a good book I want to share with you guys, and when you get an opportunity, if you want to get... Now, the Ankh Esther said to me to tell you, stop reading. They told me enough reading already. We're doing too much reading and too much talking, not enough action. But I know a lot of people still need to see their own evidence. This is a book called The Dictionary of Ecclesiastical Latin. It's by Leo F. Stelten, and his name is spelled S-T-E-L-T-E-N. This book breaks down a lot of the Latin verbiage, especially where it's connected to the Vatican and the Church. The Dictionary of Ecclesiastical Latin. There are different forms of Latin. This is Church Latin. Leo, middle initial F like Frank, last name Stelten, S-T-E-L-T-E-N. I broke down a lot of Latin verbiage and a lot of information about the Vatican. And if you don't think that the Vatican is controlling things, when you get into the back of this book and start seeing how this thing goes, you, with your insight now and your decoding capabilities now, you will definitely be able to figure it out if you still can't figure it out with me giving it to you. Okay? Let me see now. There was something else that they wanted me to give, which goes back to what the brother was saying about the gen or the genus. The word genus means a class or group of individuals, species of individuals, a kind, a sort, a class, a race, stock, gender, kind. Genos, see, gen. Now, gen was production of genus or kin, And I don't have my dictionary in front of me to see what Jens said. But the problem that I had when I got into Jens was the word gender. Because when I got into the word gender, which meant a kind, sort, class, and to beget, it kept taking me down, and I wound up getting into genealogy, which is a record or account. But I can't find it right now. There was something I had found out about that word that had to do with the language. Jens is a nation, a family, a people, the chosen people. That's what he likes. Is that what you were trying to say about Jens, honey? Or is it, I know you didn't, something spiritual connected to you, what you're dropping.
The Jens race was the first one to come down. They were the fallen. The Jens race was the first.
Okay.
They were coming to consciousness. We were burning earth. We were made of earth and fire. We made a fire.
Okay, he said the jinns were the first race to come down here, the fallen ones, that had to turn over the reins to the man that was made out of mud and clay and chimp. I added the and chimp part. Okay, now, a couple of things that you guys need to be clear about. Oh, thank you, sweetie. Is some of the things that you're calling yourselves, the Oncasters want you guys to get out of some of the things you're calling yourselves. Like, for example, yesterday, how many brothers in here now want to be called husbands?
No.
Housebound servant? What brother wants to be a house slave? Look up the word family. F-A-M-I-L-Y. When you look up the word family and you get into the brackets, and you may not even have to go to the brackets, it'll tell you a family is a bunch of house servants and slaves.
Oh man.
You see it? Who sees it? Somebody see it and want to read it? Loud enough to be on the mic? Because I mean, if you don't see what I see, then I need to go get my dictionary and come up here and read it to somebody.
A fundamental social group in society typically consisting of parents and their offspring, two or more people who share goals, values, having commitments to one another, resides usually in the same place.
That's not what I'm looking for.
In
the brackets, man. What's it say about family in the brackets?
It says family, household, family, service.
It says service. Family, household, service. How many of you guys thought you had a family? Tell the truth. You thought you had a family. And that you thought you were a part of a family. Now that you know the word family means slaves and house servants, how many of you want to have a family? How many of you want to be a part of a family, including the family of Jesus?
Is that why I got treated so bad?
I don't know why we got treated so bad. There are a bunch of you guys sitting in here that did not look in your dictionary. And I'm going to tell you now, I don't like that. When I give you a word and I ask you to look in a dictionary and see for yourself with your eyes what I am saying, there is a rule, and you're not supposed to believe me. The Oncaster told me to tell you stop doing that, to quit believing everything that people tell you without verifying that what they're saying is accurate. Yes. That's why we're in this condition now. We believed everything we were told about slavery, about being brought from Africa, about being families with husbands. Yes. Being black.
Black law, fourth edition, got 2 pages of family.
And we're not going to spend 2 pages to find out what black law has to say. That's fourth edition?
It doesn't say what you said.
Huh?
It's got 2 pages of different definitions of family.
Wow. And none of them say what I just said.
Not initially. I don't see no brackets either.
Well, we're in the regular English dictionary.
Legal term.
Family, that's legal court verbiage. That's why I said, they said you can use what you need to use to get what you need to get, but be clear on what you really are. Just like if you're trying to get a loan and they ask you, are you a U.S. citizen is a servant. That's a problem. You know, until I don't know what to do yet. Until we figure out. You can either do like Valor says and scratch no and write something else and hope they don't have an issue with it. You can check yes and just know that, well, it ain't me, but I don't have no other option. I don't know what to tell you. You know what I'm saying? So what you're looking at is legal terms. Maybe someone should show him a regular dictionary, because like he said, if he looked and the way he worded it is, I don't see nothing about what you just said. That's kind of like, sis, you ain't telling the truth. Because this book don't say that. So somebody show him a real dictionary so he can see that I'm not saying that. Am I saying that, that family means slave or servant?
No.
Who said it? Where does it say that? In the dictionary. We got Merriam-Webster's right here. Random House. House and Mifflin. Oxford. Thorndike. Do all your dictionaries say that the word family in the brackets means servant? So who am I saying it?
No, Random House.
Huh?
The book is.
The book says it. Now, it could be wrong, but I, hey, this is their stuff. What did I say the ancestors said do? Slap them upside the head with their stuff. Okay? Because they've been slapping you upside your head with their stuff. Yes.
Can I ask you a question?
Yes.
When you go to the dictionary and you're looking up the definition of words, you should go to what's in the brackets first.
I go to the brackets first, and then I read everything else.
Okay, what's the difference? I mean, why is that definition in brackets and then the rest of it, what's the difference?
What's in the brackets shows the origins and tracing of a word and what the word meant when it first started versus what they say it means now to keep the Vatican in more control. Is anybody? Yes, sir.
Oh, no.
Okay. You got some more that you want to add? Because I can look at you sometimes and tell you want to say something. You can't wait till it's over because we got to stop.
No. Opening.
When I look at you, that's your opening.
Okay, what's the difference?
Because, you know, we want to hear what you got to say. I love Brother Zakari. Y'all need to get this brother to do a lecture, honestly.
You were speaking earlier about our DNA.
Our DNA.
Right. And what we're not understanding is someone else has rewritten the script.
Yes.
So, and it says in the Bible that the serpent tribe is not sitting in the sea. They are the lost.
Right.
The serpent tribe is the tribe of Dan, D-A-N. So, if I'm going to mimic you, and I'm going to put everything coded, and you're going to trace your genes, you're going to call it the DNA, but that's me. Yours is our transportation system. It's called the CTA.
Okay, he's saying that DNA applies to the rulers of the world now, and for us, we shouldn't call it DNA, we should call it CTA.
Which
goes back to the cat. To the cat.
And what is the cat? It's your soul. He's a people's soul. He's a soul.
Okay, now that's important.
And yesterday you were talking about this Quivira. And you said the translation of Quivira. Wichita
villages in Wichita villages something. I don't even remember.
Which is Wichita.
Right, Wichita, the witch.
The
witches, the witch.
The Wichita nation.
Which means to know.
The nation called themselves the
Kitty Kittish.
Mm-hmm.
The Kitty Kittish.
Wow.
When the Jesuits came over here. Like you were saying before, about them saying the arms were first, they come out of the Christian apple.
Mm-hmm.
When the Jesuits came over, they called these people the Cat Nation.
The Cat Nation.
Cat Nation.
That's what they were called. The Cat Nation.
He said when the Jesuits first came over here, we called ourselves, or the Wichita Nation, which really was really all of us, but called ourselves the Kittish. The Kitty Kittish. And the Jesuits came over here calling us the cat race or cat people, the cat nation.
And it just happens you pull up on the internet and you look up the etymology of cat, or Egyptology. And they'll tell you that the cat is influential in Christianity and what you call Mohammedism. The word Muhammad breaks down to
the
doorway to the black cat, and a Christian breaks down to the cat. And both of them give a I'm it to this Christ, which is Kit, and Muhammad, which is the Kit.
Well, the Christ is not the Kit. The Kara essence is the Kit.
The
K-R-I-S-T is
Kit. It's
the
head Kit. It's the R-I-N-D-H. The D-T means Kit.
Okay.
Question for the brothers.
Huh?
Question for the brothers.
Go ahead. Loud.
Is that what the Cherokee or literally called Kit to War?
All of them have CT without being
CT, KT, or something to that effect. All right. Now, How many of you guys have a mate and you're here with your mate? I'm not even going to make you look it up, but when you get a chance, you should look it up. The word mate means meat, meal, or food. That's the word mate, M-A-T-E. Now, you know what you have? You know what you have? And this goes back to even what the brother is saying. This is what your people are, and these may or may not, and this is going to get back to what you and I were discussing earlier, Carl. This is going back to the what he said, the first letter is C, last letter is T, Kent. You have a consort. Turn to the dictionary, in regular dictionary, look up the word consort. You don't have mates and wives and husbands. You don't have boys and girls either, because the word boy means a knave, a servant, and it also means dishonest. Mm-hmm. When you get a chance, look it up. That's the word boy. And they kept calling our brothers boys even until they got to be old enough to be their great-granddaddy. And the word girl means young person. So for now, we'll just say we have progeny until we come up with something better. You know, which is toward and for the gene. Gene, yes.
Just like on the bathroom door. When you go to the bathroom and touch that boy and girl, it's a guy and gal. The gal is a cat and the guy is a fake. The guy is a man portrayed to be a woman. The gal is a cat.
Whoa. Okay. Guys are cats and gals are fae? No, gals are cats and the guys are...
Guy is a male homosexual. A gal is a...
Okay. Golly. The word consort means in accord with. Ships accompanying one another.
Sure.
To unify, to accompany the spouse of a royal person. Like, that's my consort sitting at the table back there. I don't have no mate. Okay? Or a housebound man servant. Husband. All I'm saying is the archivist wants you guys to be clear on what you are using to address yourself as. And your people that you have much compassion for. That you want to be in accord with. Okay? All right. Does everybody see that? All right. Now, there's a lot going on here, but I'm not going to go through every little detail because, you know, we got a short day. All right. These are some of the things that they want me to tell you to do. And I, as they gave this stuff to me over the last month, I just wrote it all down. First of all, they want you to determine who's running this operation. And by that, they mean who is running your vessel. Your individual self. Are you running you, or is your employer running you, or are your children running you, is your so-called mate, spouse, wife, husband, consort running you? Is the media running you? Who's running? Who's ruling your vessel? You need to figure that out. And in order for you to figure that out, they suggested that you try and make an effort, which is going to be hard for some people. Some people have already done it. Make an attempt to go 1 week without watching any of their television, any movies, or listening to the radio at all. 1 week. And with that, not being in the house going, that's boring, able to spend a week. Not saying you got to be in the house all day, every day, but don't go running out of the house just because it's too quiet in here. You need a 1 week to try being in a silent space with just you and your consorts and your progeny or whomever, and that's going to be hard for folks that have children and husbands that are like, wait a minute, baby, can we do that next week? Because the championships and the playoffs are coming up. You know what I'm saying? But they want you to try because in that week of silence, you will get an opportunity to do a lot of thinking for yourself, which is not the same as being in prison. That's not a silence. Even though some people get thinking done in there, it's not that easy to get a lot of thinking done, because in prison you got to watch your back. And they also, speaking of prison, wanted me to mention this. For brothers that have been incarcerated and have become subjugated or violated as victims of men that are what you call stronger than them physically, or where they were ganged up on by several guys physically, or in some other way so-called punked into being somebody else's so-called punk or whatever, they wanted those brothers to understand clearly that there is nothing wrong with you. And I don't know if that's anybody in the room or just somebody that may be watching the tape. There is nothing wrong with you. Comprehend that in that instance, you were a victim and you had to go into whatever was your survival mode. What they want you to comprehend is you are not under any circumstances to feel like a punk that was victimized. If you want to look at someone as a so-called punk, they said that you should look at, and all brothers that are incarcerated need to start looking differently at the brothers that are subjugating other brothers. Because to them, there is something wrong with the man that feels like, you know, I'm big, bad, whoever, but I'm a man, but you can yet still get your erection up hard enough to violate another man and then consider that man a punk when you're the one that had your heart up for him. You found something so attractive about him that you were able to keep it up and keep raping him and whoever. They said those brothers are the ones that had the problem. There was something wrong with them. There's nothing wrong with the brothers that became the victims of these brothers. There is no shame in being not strong enough physically to overcome somebody else that may have more muscle mass or more fighting skills or fighting experience than you. Do you understand that? Okay. Because there are a lot of brothers that are carrying a lot of, the orchestra said, a lot of shame about things that happened to them when they were coming up, when they were not the ones that were the problem. The brothers that victimized them, those are the punks. The guys that are running around forcing themselves on others in prison, those are the biggest, I don't want to use the word fags, because they said if brothers that are into that, that's okay. But it needs to be a consenting situation. You understand? But the brother that forces himself on a smaller or weaker man, he is the punk in the scenario. You get that?
Right.
All right. And I know brothers are like, please change the subject. You know, brothers don't like discuss, especially any brother that's been there. They don't want to discuss it. They also want you to get into the barter and trade mentality. Too many of us are too reliant on the Federal Reserve note. It ain't money. And their thing is, they want to know what the heck happened to you guys. Their thing is, it's an embarrassment to them. As the founders of mathematics and the inventors of all language and alphabet, to have any of their progeny run around and say things like, well, I'm not that good at reading. I ain't that good at words. I'm not good at math. Their thing is, what do you mean you're not good at what your people invented? You are the masters of it. It's just dormant in you for now. All you need to do is reactivate your CTA, which other people call DNA, and bring your stuff forward. You are good at anything you as a melanated person does or do. Do you understand? They said we are the individuals that were spinning silk and weaving fabric and wearing clothes and building all kinds of fabulous things. Algebra is our stuff. Geometry is our stuff. Agriculture is our stuff. Basket weaving, pottery and bowl making, that's our stuff. What do you mean you don't know how to do anything and the white man won't give you a job? They said make your own damn job. What is wrong with you? And I'm not talking to any individuals specifically. I'm just telling you what they told me to tell you. Everything came from you, and you can do everything, and you can do anything. Decide in your your week of silence, what you can do and what you're about, and start there. And even if you may be a master woods carver or a master artist that can't seem to sell your wares because your people don't want to buy it and your people can't afford it, so they say, then sell it to other people's people. Because a lot of Europeans spend a lot of money on stuff that comes from people that look like you. So they say get back into the basket weaving, the bowl making, the moccasin making, because the shoe industry started with us. And the shoe lasting machine was invented by a brother. Why do we have to buy everything we have? When we were coming up, all of our children were taught things like how to sew, how to knit, how to crochet, how to make shoes, and now you don't know how to even survive without going to buy everything from pink people. You should be making your own shoes, making your own clothes. And for those of you that can't, there are those of us that can. They basically said, we do not need the Europeans anymore. We really never did, but that was a part of the dormancy. They needed us. The word is, they told me there are plenty of brothers in America that have farms and can't get anybody to help them run these farms. And they are growing food to feed our people who are not buying the food from them. And then it's like, oh, we can't get it because there are no trucks. They said, bull. There are a lot of young brothers that have little trucking companies, 2-3 trucks, that can do cross-country because they got the sleepers in the truck. They can go get the food and bring it back. They're tired of your excuses. There are no excuses. Everything we need, we have it. There are jewelers that make jewelry that our people are not buying. Fine. Don't buy it. Sell it to somebody else. We have people that know how to make shoes that we're not buying. They're usually in the shoe repair business, and a lot of us won't even take shoes to repair because we're too busy running to Payless buying a new $5 pair. Instead of keeping the other brother alive by spending $5 to get the ones you got fixed. Do you comprehend what they're asking me to tell you? Is there anybody that has a question about it before I move on to the next thing? Now, getting back into the consorts. Right now, we are in what appears to be a dire state. And Carl and I were discussing this in my consort back there, OJ. We were discussing this. One of the things that they want our people to understand is this. The cognizant community is a very small group of people. And that does not mean that everyone else is not coming along. But we are what they call the first wave. It is our responsibility as the first wave to do the job of laying the foundation for those that are not trying to hear you right now.
Right.
Which I brought up yesterday. There are a lot of people that you, it's like, come on, Mama, you want to come to this? The sister's here. She's talking about some stuff. We need to go. It's like, no, I'm going to church. Or your children don't want to hear it. You got people that you want to bring that ain't coming. Leave them behind. They're following who? Psycho Papa. They're on their way to hell. And if you keep trying to bring them, you're going to get your parts or your parts. Now, this is what they want. And I know this is pissing some sisters off. What they wanted you to know is when your man is with you, as long as he treats you like you are the only woman on earth and makes you feel like the empress you are, what he is doing when he is not in your face is really not your business as long as he doesn't bring anything to you. And if you allow the man to be open with you about what he's doing, then between the two of you, you can protect yourself from his promiscuous behavior. Okay? Because he's not your property. They said you don't own him.
Stop owning shit.
Now, what they said is this. You got to look at the rest of the world and understand how you got messed up. A den of lions, the lion stays at the den with the cubs, slapping them around all day. Man, get away from me. Get away from me, man. Go play. Go on. Go on. And the lionesses go out and do the hunt.
Right.
And bring back the food.
Right.
if you got the job, you go get the, you bring back the stuff. They also said, look at a chessboard. Where is the king? Always in the castle. The queen is all over the place kicking butt. Why can't you be the queen kicking butt? Why do you have to beat up on your king? That's what they wanted you to know. Take it or leave it. Yes, sir.
That applies to every mammal on the face of the earth.
That applies to every mammal on the face of the earth?
The law of the nature.
The law of nature, right?
Yeah, they, now they said again, if the brother can get a job, that's good. But if he cannot, don't try to make him feel like he's less of a man because he can't impress the white man. If you impressing him, you go impress him. Men do very good with children, and children that have a father around, whether the father works or not, as long as he ain't on drugs, on drink, and beating the kids or molesting the children, those children grow up to be the most wholesome children you have ever seen. Yes.
Just to validate on what he said, in many cultures, when it came to farming, men were not even allowed where the seeds were being dropped. Their energy was not allowed in there.
I can believe that.
Women always control. Go anywhere in the third world country, women do the farming, not men.
And you're right. The energy is always, even with carrying water. You can't carry no water, you man. Y'all got that testosterone thing, and there's something wrong with the top testosterone. Now, we understand. Now, a lot of sisters have the problem with the men. They're like, man, if I let him take my car, when I get off work, I'm standing out there, he don't even pick me up. He out somewhere riding up down the street with some other woman in my car. And they said, brothers need to fix that. You need to handle the business. Don't be so messy with it. They said some brothers are just too messy. Y'all need to clean up your act.
Y'all need an education.
That's what I'm... I'm just telling you what I was told to say. Okay. Now, these Europeans... Does somebody have their hand up? I don't want to overlook anybody and move forward before I answer that question. Okay, these Europeans, how are we doing on time, sis?
We're good.
Oh, okay. These Europeans, to avoid the plague and all the disease, as well as the taxation and oppression, they started running wherever they could go to get away from whatever they were running from. And when they ran, they brought with them their diseases and their gangster mentality and their gangbanger behavior. Now, what they used to do is they would fight their way into other people's villages, people that didn't want them. Y'all got that disease stuff. Go back. They would come in and fight and battle their way into your community and run you out your stuff. Well, that's what they did here in Africa. That's what they did everywhere they go. They're running from whatever they're running from and bringing their madness to you, and we are becoming infected. We have become infected with their ways, their behaviors, their belief system, and the whole nine yards. Now, the reason they did that is they were looking for food, shelter, escape, and abundance. And that's why Alexander the Bloody is Alexander their great, because he was their great killer. Go kill and take. Okay? Let's see. They wanted you to know that France, London, Germany, Sparta, also Scotland, and England, the human side of those places were nauseatingly filthy, overcrowded, and the drinking water supply was full of dead cats, dead dogs, fecal. This is their drinking water, fecal matter, all kind of bugs, piss, and they knew people were drinking water, they just go dump shit in it. They go pissing. This is their behavior. Now, keep in mind what America looked like prior to their arrival. Look at the water now. Look at the air now. Look at the land now. Now, they try to make it look like their neighborhoods are just so clean.
Right.
You know, and our neighborhoods are so dirty. But how many people know what's going on in the house?
All right. Always in there.
Everybody saying you don't know what goes on behind closed doors. They also said priests, monks, and nuns are Roman Catholic soldiers. Don't you ever forget it. Now, one of the things they wanted you guys to know about is that when these people started running, the Pope and them and the soldiers. the Roman Catholic soldiers wanted to bring the flock back into the Christian fold and bring in new subjects as well. That's how they came over here. When they influxed here and made a swarm of infection here, they had to build so many, as the Irish and the Scottish and all these people came running, or the Franciscans came running here, they had to keep building more Catholic churches to keep up, to handle this populace. And everything is about this whole thing. Right now, America is a part of the Roman Catholic Church, and I'm going to keep going and bring that out in a minute. But I need to make sure I don't overlook any of these notes things that you guys are supposed to know. There's something that they were doing called AD, write this down so you can research this work. It's called AD, Patres, AD, separate word, P-A-T-R-E-S, Ad Patres, which means to the fathers. They had to bring people Ad Patres, which means to the fathers, but it's defined as dead. When they bring you to the Father, you're dead. And most people that you know that are Christians are mentally dead. They don't have a clue and they don't want a clue. Okay? Now, let's see. The Christian church, which you guys already know, is headed by the Bishop of Rome, which you just looked up, which is commonly known as the Pope or the Papa or the Father, which means Father. In the 9th century, from then till about 1520, the word church only meant Western Europe or Western Asia, which is Europe. Now it's darn near the whole planet. China may not be, and that's because at one point when China was becoming infected with this Christian belief system, they just got where they killed off all the Christians because they were infecting their whole political process. The same thing happened in Japan. When Japan became infected, the Japanese killed off every Christian because they were infected. Unfortunately, we haven't figured out that part yet. Okay. And that's kind of what happened in Haiti. I don't know how many people know about the Toussaint Louverture, but it wasn't so much him as it was his right-hand man, Dessalines, the lion. Dessalines, he decided one day that he wanted every pink person on the island dead and hanging from a tree by sunrise. He made that I want every white person on Haiti dead by sunup. And by sunup, a lot of people were dead, but not everybody. This was the problem. And this is the problem that our people are going to have, if and when anything ever jumps off. What happened was, Dessalines soldiers, a lot of them were half-breed. Well, man, I can't kill every white person. My mama was white. My granddaddy is white. And they had that kind of dichotomy of loyalty. When you have your loyalty split, you can't be on any side. And unfortunately, our people are very infected because a lot of us have that, you know, these half-breed people that if anything ever goes down, you can't get to the white boy because you got to go through these niggas first. Okay, when I say niggas, we're not niggers. Niggers is them. They're the nigger. They were coming here wearing knickerbockers, and niggers means to cut, and they're cutting everything up and dividing everything up. Niggas and negas and nagas is another word for God, and I'm going to give you these spellings to look up at a future date. N-E-G-U-S for those that don't know the definition, and N-A-G-A-S for those that don't know the definition. Those were just melanated people that were, for lack of better words, gods. And you know, I don't like God because that means German. Your hand is up, sweetie.
Yeah, when you were talking about Ad Patres,
mm-hmm.
You said it was the father.
To the father.
To the father. Okay, now, you said that any dead entity?
No. The phrase Ad Patres, in Latin it's Ad Patres. It translates in English to the phrase to the father. But when you look it up in a Latin dictionary, the definition of the word at...
Okay, Moore, we come to the end of this segment, and I hope that you all got something out of this. And there's still more to come, so what I think I would do is on Thursday's broadcast, we'll bring back the remainder of this information and lay it out until we exhaust it. And but tomorrow night, I will be teaching contract law with the Moorish American government. So make sure you deal with the Moorish American government, the awakening, right here on Blog Talk Radio. And so I hope that you are able to decipher some of the information that was laid out for you this evening. Inside the Hoggers Archive, we have a massive amount of dictionary and terminology for you to examine the words and pay very close attention to the definition, what's in brackets and stuff, and the original meanings of words and stuff, because that's very, very important. This is actually one of the main tools that's being used inside the United States. When you understand and you're able to master the definition of terminology, you're able to do a lot of things. You'll get a clear and concise understanding of what you're doing. I'm going to have to close down the broadcast this evening. We're running out of time, and I certainly appreciate you all for being here. I've been your host, Tahaka Amana L. Bay, and until next time.